The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Tuesday, February 4th, 2020. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live, but also prefer. I don't have my thing. It is a special edition of the Majority Report. Everything's all messed up, folks. Thank you. Tonight, we will do live coverage of the State of the Union Address. I anticipate about four people listening to the program, watching the program, enduring the program. As it's going to be painful, I suggest you take out liquor, or of course only in those places where drugs are legal.
Like Brooklyn?
Here.
Or decriminalized, or just where there's not a tremendous amount of...
I would just like to say that I learned my lesson. Psych!
And I would start early with the hopes that you'll be able to pass out halfway through the speech. The rest of you, we will be here talking about what happened last night in Iowa, what we anticipate happening next week in New Hampshire, and beyond. Also, what's going on with impeachment. Tomorrow will be the final vote. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Do we have that Manchin clip? We should also get that Manchin clip. I just don't see it on the list. Late entry. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Obviously, a long night last night, particularly for myself. I did not get home until about three. So that was fun. We will actually talk a little bit about that exchange because it had to do with, in a fairly direct way, what I think we witnessed yesterday in Iowa. The long and short of it is that the Iowa caucus was a crap show. There was a little bit more complication to the balloting this time around. And Nomi Konst, who was on the program last night, was explaining a little bit of what it was. And essentially, there was never any assessment of who was showing up in that first round. As you know, there are two rounds of votes in the caucus. And the second one is called the realignment, or the final vote, sometimes they say. And so what happens is everybody comes in, they vote on the first round, and they vote by actually moving to a section of the room. And if there is a section of the room representative of a candidate, and there were, just as a reminder, last night, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 candidates, if you include uncommitted and other. So maybe there were some write-ins. But we had people like not just Yang and Steyer, but we also had Tulsi Gabbard. We had Michael Bloomberg. We had Michael Bennett. We had Deval Patrick. Yes, still in the race.
Oh, wow.
Delaney, even though he had left the race, he managed to pull in zero votes. I don't know why they would include him, but I guess he was still on the ballot or had qualified in some fashion. But nevertheless, in the past, there has been no indication of what the change was between the first round of voting and the realignment. And people were not clear as to like how many people walked away. I mean, this is the theoretically on some level, the point of the caucus, right, is to get a sense of not just who everybody's first pick is, but who their second pick is. But if you don't know who their first pick was, you can't tell who their second pick was. Does that make sense? It just added some transparency to make sure the things were up and up. Now, I personally think that the caucuses, and I've believed this for a long time, I think they're undemocratic insofar as the bar to entry is just higher than I would like. I also think, though, there is some I don't know, nostalgic value to like having people try and persuade each other, et cetera, et cetera. I guess maybe because it's in a room, because it's in a gym, it becomes more romantic in some way, as opposed to like people doing that in the run-up to a primary with their neighbor. But this is more like a, you know, a town meeting, and I guess there's some value in that maybe. And there is some interesting value in the fact that we know the difference between the first vote and the final vote. But I don't think we're going to have the Iowa caucuses to kick around anymore. And if we do, it's an incredibly irresponsible decision by somebody. And apparently what happened was not necessarily because of, I mean, it seems to me, however they were doing this before in terms of tallying up what the final results were, there's no reason why you can't have two columns of a piece of paper. And we've seen these columns of a piece of paper because they actually fill them out and just, I don't know, report to them by phone or whatever the thing was. But for whatever reason, they brought in an app this time. They paid $60,000 or $70,000 to the app. It was a piece of garbage. And it failed monumentally. And the implications of that are you could divide up into two buckets, if you will. The first bucket is it has implications on the race. Insofar as, you know, and we had multiple people tell us this yesterday, delegate-wise, there's not a lot of delegates at stake. But it's the first time that people vote, certain narratives are created, it impacts fundraising, et cetera, going into New Hampshire. The other sort of bucket of issues that come out of this is, how did they screw this up so badly? You know, you can go back to 2020 and you can see like, hey, I mean, excuse me, the year 2000, and you could see we really need to get our voting situations, you know, sort of standardized and get it together. Now, we can't necessarily do that on a national level without having the Republicans sign off to it. There's been times since 2000 where Democrats have controlled everything. They didn't do it then. But you would think at least within the context of the Democratic Party, maybe we would see some value in this. Particularly 2016, there was a certain amount of concern about the integrity of the vote. And part of the reason why I think that we are stuck in this situation, let's address the second part first, right? This is the meta narrative story from last night. There's obviously been a lot of sort of conspiracy theories that have been promulgated online because presumably, and maybe less so as we see the real results, Bernie Sanders was denied a victory speech. And certainly the implications of the Des Moines Register poll that would have come out showing Bernie Sanders ahead was also held back. Now, the people associated with the poll have nothing to do with the people associated with the app and with the Iowa Democratic Party. But nevertheless, I think the problem is, and this is, you know, a dynamic that exists not just in the Democratic Party. It exists in private enterprise. It exists in social clubs, in churches.
Air America.
And in Air America. And this is, I will say this. When you have monumental incompetence that is a function of people self-dealing and of people who are simply pursuing a task where the pursuit of that task is secondary to enriching themselves, it certainly will create an atmosphere where people develop conspiracy theories because they can't imagine that those people don't share the same basic agenda where success is not job number one. Because a significant portion of our society is not like that. But there is a significant portion that is, and it just so happens that they tend, more often than not, to be successful in the context of our society, because you are rewarded. So in other words, at Air America, for instance, I had listeners who would say, like, there's got to be a mole in Air America. You've got so many listeners. You have such a dedicated audience. All true. Our ratings were great. How can you keep failing like this? And the reason why we kept failing like that was because the radio executives they brought in, who were throw-offs, radio executives start at, like, basically a C level in terms of just broadly humanity. The ones who get thrown off from the radio industry are, like, D-level folks.
We have a rap problem.
Okay, exactly. And they come into Air America, and instead of, like, saying, oh, we have access to some of the best political targeting technology to go and find our listeners and activate them to increase our ratings and et cetera, et cetera. They say, my buddy works printing cards that he mails with a sweepstakes. And so we're going to go that route because that a radio executive knows if he sends a contract to that dude, when this guy loses his job, that dude is going to hire him for something else.
Years ago, I interviewed a guy who did an incubator, and one of his stories in his trajectory to get where he went was he got a job out of college, or he didn't go to college, at a billboard sales company. And to make a long story short, he found a brilliant way of making the whole process way more efficient, got fired.
Yes, because the efficiency does not pass the money around to everybody who is basically winked and nodded to each other. Now, at a private enterprise, that sucks. The enterprise fails. But when this exists in the context of an institution that is at least presumably somewhat democratic, somewhat supposed to be, because there's elections, right? It's not like you're hired, theoretically, to execute these things. There's some measure of trust within the organization that is placed. This is not like, you know, you're all my employees and this and that. No, I mean, you know, maybe it's only 500 people who elect Tom Perez or whoever it is. But there is ostensibly some buy-in by everybody. We rely on them for our civic functioning. This is not we're going to buy a widget from the Democratic Party. And when all of them who control the levers of this institution, their primary agenda is self-dealing, is enriching themselves without really providing any scrutiny to the competence level of those people they're doing. Because it's like, look, when I'm in a position where I have control of the dumb money, I pay you. And when you're in control of the dumb money, you pay me. Crisscross. And that's what happened last night. That's what happened last night. And last night, I ended up going to MSNBC. And sitting on the panel with me was David Plouffe. Now, does he work for Uber? Who does he like? Where's his job now?
I think he is at Uber now. I'll double
these, that. And incidentally, at the DNC in 2016, if you took a cab to the DNC, you needed to walk a half mile to get there. But if you took an Uber, you got dropped off at the front. Now, not only is that corrupt, but Uber itself is pretty bad stuff insofar as like attacking the fabric of our government and, you know, our municipal governments, among other things. But apparently Plouffe sits on the board.
More so Facebook. And just to be clear, anyways.
Of Acronym.
Yes.
And Acronym apparently acquired this company called Shadow that's doing the technology. Now, here's the weird part. Shadow got a $60,000 contract to create this app for the Iowa Democrats. And I will tell you right now, with an app that I have, made by a guy who is completely dedicated to making the show a success and the only reason why I exist, I paid some money to him. The idea of an app costing $60,000 for something that is that big of a deal is sort of stunning. So I suspect there's some other side deals that are like the app was thrown in for a reduced rate. Nevertheless, this is what's going on here. This thing was completely incompetently done. Last night at about 1:30 in the morning, Hayes turned to Plouffe and asked him this question.
There's been some reporting about the app at the center of this, which appears to have been developed by a company called Shadow that is associated with another firm called Acronym. David Plouffe, I know you've worked with Acronym. I've seen some reporting in Huffington Post and Li Fong and others have sort of walked through the connections. I just want to ask you if you've had anything to do with this app, if you know about it, if you have any insight into this.
I didn't know about it, so I'm helping Acronym. I'm a volunteer on their board.
Pause it for one second.
What?
Now,
wait,
Acronym, I want to make
club?
Clear. Exactly. Acronym is not a public service. Service entity.
I'm a volunteer on their board.
Now, maybe he's working for free on their board. That's conceivable.
It's
but
conceivable, and it's
hard.
By the way, it's conceivable if he has something like equity.
Yeah,
like let's be
right,
real
right.
about how these things.
Right,
yeah.
And let's also be real. Like we're steering contracts here.
Yeah,
it's not like I've decided to go to this private company and I'm volunteering. I'm a candy striper.
Yeah.
What are you doing for a better player?
I'm a candy striker.
Cycle? Well, the YMCA, the Little League.
That's right.
And
GM.
And GM. I just think they could use some of my volunteers.
Just make sure you do it well and you do it with passion.
All right. So.
That's the best drop ever.
All right. So back up and continue here.
Post and Li Fong and others have sort of walked through the connections. I just want to ask you if you've had anything to do with this app, if you know about it, if you have any insight into this.
I didn't know about Swivel. It, so I'm helping Acronym. I'm a volunteer on their board.
And what is Acronym?
So Acronym is a digital firm that works on digital advertising, puts out a newsletter every week about what's happening in the presidential race. My understanding is, I just texted the CEO, is Acronym's an investor in Shadow. I guess Shadow's got its own board of directors. So in my relationship with Acronym, which has been going on for a few months, I have no knowledge of Shadow.
So you weren't sitting up there the whole time being like, I actually developed
no.
this app. Okay.
I didn't know if it was Microsoft or who it was. Not to throw them under the bus.
We're going to find out more about this. And also.
All right. Now hold on for a second. Now, what do you think works on digital ads means? I would suspect that means they place digital ads and they get a commission off the top. And so they're developing relationships with people and they're trying to integrate certain things, maybe with the Iowa Democrats and maybe with Nevada Democrats. And I will also say this, you know, one of the problems with getting volunteer board members, they don't pay attention to things like your acquisitions of other companies. Because apparently he had no idea. No, I had no idea. I just
what do you do on boards of companies? Oh, we have another company that's in charge of the Iowa caucus reporting. I didn't know that.
I had no idea. Well, you know, you get what you pay for. I'm volunteering, so you can't expect me to pay attention.
I was too busy organizing the volleyball tournament for company well-being.
Now, here is where it starts, like the plot thickens here and why you're not going to get like the real story. Let's take a look at this. So we have on one hand,
wait, you
David
got a
Plouffe.
Crack at him?
Wow. David Plouffe is, well, I didn't quite take a direct shot. I helped with that question. Let's just say that.
I can imagine. I'm looking forward to watching the chair swivel in this.
But, so Plouffe is there and this, you know, this dynamic really upsets me because, this self-dealing and whatnot is a problem. And it's not just a problem within the Democratic Party, although it is one that I think a lot of the anti-establishment energy. But when we talk about corruption broadly in our society, this is what we're talking about. This is what we're talking about with Hunter Biden. Mm-hmm. Hunter Biden didn't do anything illegal. He did not do anything illegal. But it is like he is there because of a relationship he has and because whether Joe Biden responded to it or not, and I don't think he did, that is the way these things are played out. And Joe Biden cannot control Hunter Biden. He can only control Joe Biden. But he knew his son was there. And you know what? Sorry, Dad. The son is not responsible for the sins of the father, and the father's not responsible for the sins of the son. But the bottom line is, if your family member's working there, let's say, like, you're Ginny Thomas and you're working for a right wing, you know, the Heritage Foundation, and the case comes in front of you at the Supreme Court, and you're Clarence Thomas, I expect you to sit down. I expect you to recuse yourself. Joe Biden should have recused himself. You didn't do it because it's the way things are done. And after a while, when things get done this way so much, things start to break down and you get a lot of incompetence and you get a lot of, like, bending of the rules and people suddenly don't care. And so after a Pluff's comment, he changed it. He changed the story a little bit. Then I sort of took the opportunity to come back around on it.
But the other meta story has to do with this app. And I think to a certain extent, you know, part of what we're seeing, not just in the Democratic Party, across society, I mean, you've written about this years ago, is the failure of the institutions
Yes.
that we support and look to for just a basic level of competence to be corrupted. I mean, we're talking about a series of contracts. You know, we have organizations that are tied to the Democratic Party that have subsidiaries here and that are paying off people here. And they're failing. They're failing at literally the one job that they had, which is count the votes.
Yeah.
And I think this plays into the narrative of some of those candidates who are talking about corruption, who are talking about, in broad strokes, the problem of our society where merit. And frankly, this hurts Biden, too, because that is part of the story there. It's not corruption in the sense that it's illegal, but it's a question of, like, this meritocracy that we're being sold.
Yes.
Where's the evidence of it?
Well,
why don't the institutions have to play by those rules? Why is it just everyone else who doesn't have an inside track? Why do they have to play by those rules, but nobody else?
And David Plouffe wasn't terribly happy about that, I can tell you. He never broke a smile. But there was something, he was a little dead-eyed.
You should have said, and not to throw David Plouffe under the bus.
Right. And now it's not like I'm talking about that guy.
Yeah.
Because it's actually, it's larger than David Plouffe. And it's also, you know, just the, I mean, all you got to do is watch. And I've had probably half a dozen people say to me, for some reason in the past like 3 weeks, like, I can't watch MSNBC anymore. Because it's all Republicans. And it's all basically people who, I mean, they're the... It's on 11. And I think maybe some people have just been slow to pick up on it because now that we're getting closer to the actual Democratic primary, you start to see, like, hey, wait a second. These people are not saying anything that's relevant to me as a Democrat.
Right.
But that's what's going on. And, like, you know, David Plouffe has been on that set. Like, he has been glued to that set for, I don't know, 72 hours, it feels like. And he's not talking. He's not saying anything else about the app. No one else is asking him a single question about it. No, nobody's getting into the structural problems of the Democratic Party, which is really incredibly self-dealing now, and that is why you're seeing this level of incompetence. Because when job number one becomes everybody gets paid, that's what we're going to make sure happens. Everybody gets paid. Then things like saying, hey, you know what? I got to be honest with you, Bill, Mary, you guys suck at making apps. And so we're not going to pay you. I'm sorry. I've worked with that organization before, and I don't want to, they're not good. Well, we've got a relationship with them. And actually, we get some of the money. Once they do the app, then they do the advertising through us. And that's where we make a lot of our money. I mean, I don't know if that's exactly what happened, but I'm sure it's similar. Speaking of maybe some conflicts of interest, we just talked about David Plouffe with the app. I got some bad news for you Pod Save America folks. People think I just dropped that on my Bumble profile. That you can do better than PodSave.
Your favorite podcast sucks.
Exactly.
Ask me why.
Exactly. Here is, what's his name? Tommy Vietor? I got to be honest.
Vietor?
I don't think I've listened to more than 3 minutes of PodSave America in my entire life.
Do you remember when we were negotiating with McConnell?
Honestly, I just take your word for it. Now who is this? Like, tell me what's going on here. I don't even know what this is.
You know, we were talking about this before. Well, you're going to explain what this is, but we were saying how, what is it? Why is it that all of these guys have director and comedian names? just on a tangent.
Oh, yeah.
Favreau, love it.
That helps. So Tommy Vietor, agreed. Okay, so Tommy was hanging out with the... So where it is?
So this is Vitor. This is...
Favreau.
Favreau. And this is Lovett. And this is, I believe, that's the CEO of Acronym.
Oh, all right. Well, they're all buddies. That's cool. Nice,
like, just a birthday party.
Yeah. Where is it? Like,
this was 2 days ago.
Show the whole thread.
Oh, 2 days ago. And they're talking about...
Top, that other one is irrelevant. This is...
Who else was at the fun party? The National Organizing Director of Buttigieg and the head of the Iowa Democratic Party, Troy M. Price. I mean, look...
I think this is like an Acronym launch, possibly. I mean, the point is that they're all quite friendly.
Yeah, that's inevitable, right? You all work in politics, you're all going to be friendly. The problem is when you do not have, and I think that's perfectly fine, and it's obvious, right? That's what's going to happen. I'm friendly with a lot of different comedians, and you know, it's inevitable. You work in one industry for long enough, you're going to have friends and your friends are going to work for other campaigns and you're going to have these relationships. The problem becomes when there are no controls that keep those relationships from overriding the responsibility that these people have to the members of their party, to the general citizenry. I mean, this is when the breakdown happens, when the rules, the ethics, the oversight. There is no oversight. There is no transparency of what goes on in the National Democratic Party. And when you get stuff like Tom Perez, Barack Obama exerting his influence into the race, I mean, I suppose he can do that. But was it because Tom Perez was the best guy for the job, or was it because the Obama people wanted to have some control over this apparatus? And when they can't get somebody who's qualified for the job, they get somebody who that will give them that control. And when they get that person who is going to give them the control, but not necessarily suited for that job. And I think Tom Perez, I've heard very good things of him at the Civil Liberties Division of the Department of Justice. But that doesn't mean that he's a good party organizer. Doesn't mean that he's a politician. And this is what you get. This shit show. It's a shit show. Here is the Pod Save America episode that was dropped earlier today. Favs, Lovett, Twitter, Dan Pfeiffer discuss what went wrong, what it means for the caucus moving forward, how the candidates move on from here. Iowa, you had one job out now.
Come on, Iowans.
Yeah, Iowa.
Yeah, what that is a disgusting frame.
Now,
just beating up on the citizens of Iowa.
Has anybody listened to this podcast?
No.
You mean extensively or this particular episode?
That episode.
No, it came out like a minute after I pulled it for, you know.
Oh, so it's up now.
Yeah.
They just came out with it.
It's up, yep.
And how much do they talk about their friends?
It looks like, at least per the show notes, it's half.
Pretty good show notes there.
Yeah, per the show notes, it's half Iowa's caucus mishap. They don't link to any Intercept reporting in that. They link a lot of...
they talk about Acronym?
I don't know if they mentioned Acronym. They mentioned the app mishap, but you can see...
Sort of weird how the name Acronym wouldn't come in there. Those are pretty extensive notes.
Yeah.
Vox, how the result, the system-wide disaster, system-wide, how the Iowa caucus is melted down. Lot of reporting there. I don't know. I guess we would have to listen.
From the description, this is obscuring to me.
Who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
Well, systems-wide breakdown. There was an app failure. That's very specific.
Yeah, I think The Intercept would have been nice to see on that list.
Sort of odd.
Yeah.
The Intercept has been owning the story. I mean, Li Fang's reporting is indispensable on this.
They are on the candidates and results side of things, so they are reading The Intercept.
So that's basically what the story is with Iowa. Now, the political implications of it, as we watch Vice President Pence walk in and people come out of their cars and whatnot. The political implications of this out of Iowa. Right. And here are the results. I mean, well, we don't really know the final results. All we know is about 60% of the results. Pete Buttigieg, at this point, has about 27% of the total delegates, the statewide delegates. Sanders, about 25%. Elizabeth Warren, 18%. Biden, about 15.5%. Klobuchar, about 12.5%. And then Yang has 1%. Now, that's 60%, so this really doesn't mean much. And in, you know, if this was a normal night, we would mention it, and then we just keep drinking.
Right.
Now, in the first round, you had Sanders with 25% or 24% of the vote, Buttigieg with 21%, Warren with almost 19%, Biden with about 14.5%, Klobuchar with 12.7%. So a little bit different. Buttigieg was a lot of people's second choice. Sanders was some people's second choice. Warren was some people's second choice. And they mostly came, it appears, from Biden. Biden and Klobuchar, Biden and, you know, Yang, I guess, and Steyer is where Buttigieg picked up some of his support in terms of those things. But here's the long and short of it. Buttigieg helped himself. He surprised a lot of people. The final Des Moines Register poll, which we saw after the fact, of course, showed Buttigieg around, I think it was third. Warren second. Biden fourth. So Buttigieg did well. Sanders obviously did well. He may end up being the actual winner. He did not outperform his polls, which is a red flag for me. There's a lot of different, arguments that you can make as to why that's the case. It's conceivable that in Iowa there is a diminishing returns for how many times you knock on people's doors. We saw that with Dean. I don't know if that's the case or not. It could be because Sanders was stuck in the Senate, and Pete Buttigieg apparently in the last 10 days in Iowa was all over the place, and he had the whole place to himself.
And spent an unbelievable amount of money. I also wonder too, and you would have a better sense maybe just going through these, but obviously Obama did it in 2008 in Iowa, but I'm just wondering if you're trying to convince new people to go into the process, and there's a lot of obvious barriers, including, as we should talk about more, really practical ones, like voting's inconvenient and, frankly,
or if you have discriminatory any type of disability or challenge,
physical challenge, work, children. I mean, there's so many barriers to it, and I just have to think, like, it's one thing in New Hampshire, Nevada, or California to say, okay, you know what? You've convinced me of the importance of this. I'm going to figure out a way of waiting in line a bit and casting a vote. Iowa, you have to go through that. And then it's like, you got to go to a gym.
Nevada is a caucus
as
well.
Nevada is a caucus. But I mean, that just struck me watching. There is the romance of, you know, it's cool. People are persuading each other, but it's a very alienating, very like, I mean, I wouldn't feel entirely comfortable in that process, frankly. And you can only imagine. I mean, what if you go and you have a working class politics, you're going to go vote for Sanders, and then your boss is there caucusing right. for Buttigieg? I mean, there's just a lot of things that are
what
worth considering.
What if your husband is rather domineering? And
yeah,
maybe,
I mean, yeah. He's,
you know,
yeah,
who knows?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Maybe your mom is there, and you know, she doesn't want to get – who knows? With all that said, he underperformed at least where we anticipated he would. Now, I don't know what that says. We will have a better sense of what happens in New Hampshire and in the other elections. I will say this, that there's two things that are clear. One is Joe Biden. We're not quite at put a fork in him, but I would take the fork out of the drawer. I would make sure it's clean. I would put it in your hand, and I would get ready to put that fork in him. For him to come in fourth is really bad. For him to come in fifth, forget it. And you can hear all the people say, like, well, it's muted because Everybody who's going to give him that money to those PACs, those super PACs, they know what he got there. And they know they are the chances of them burning that money has just gone up by about 75% when they decide to do that. He is a bad bet. And I would say the best thing that happened to Bernie Sanders, aside from coming in either first or second, or more or less tied for first, is Amy Klobuchar. Because for Sanders, having multiple options for, you know, the centrist, because it's the money that looks at the ideology, is helpful. So we will know more after New Hampshire. It's fascinating. Klobuchar, if she did come in fifth, she may have dropped out if it was announced last night. She may have been stuck there, but she was smart enough to come out and say, like, I'm going to claim victory and get some momentum, make it look like I did something. That was a smart move. So New Hampshire will tell us a lot, but I don't think Pete Buttigieg, I'm sorry, I just do not think he is going to have the durability to make it. I think he's got the liabilities that we talk about. He's also got the liabilities. Wasn't there a, do we have that? Wasn't there some type of like exchange with a caucus goer with Buttigieg?
Oh yeah.
It's ugly, but it's a reality in the context of America. I mean, we are not past the time, ladies and gentlemen, where the right has accepted the notion of gay marriage, never mind being gay. It's just that the Republican Party has decided they're not going to go out of their way to make it a major public bludgeon. But check this out. This is a Democrat who is going in to caucus for Pete Buttigieg.
Already has. You'll see.
Watch what happens here. This is amazing.
So are you saying that he has a same-sex partner?
Yes.
Are you kidding?
He's married to him, yeah.
Well, then I don't want anybody like that in the White House. So can I have my card back?
I don't know.
Find it.
We could go ask.
I never knew that.
Well, so the whole point of it is, though, he's a human being, right? Just like you and me, and shouldn't really matter. That's what.
Well, he better read the Bible.
He does, and he says that God doesn't choose a political party. Because
why does it say in the Bible that a man should marry a woman then?
Well, I totally respect your viewpoint on this. I so totally do. But I think that we were not around.
How come this has never been brought out before?
It's common knowledge.
I never heard it.
We can talk to someone if you need to talk to them about this. I don't know the rules on this or not, but I guess what I would like you to just dig deep inside and think, like, should it matter if it's a woman or if it's a man or if they're heterosexual or homosexual if you believe in what they say? That's my question.
It all just went right down the toilet is where it all just went.
You have a total right to your opinion, and I am not trying to tell you to think otherwise, but we'll ask what they want us to do. But I just ask you to look inside your heart, because you sound like a Christian woman to me, and I'm a Christian woman, and my God wants me to love everybody. I do, yep.
So you must not believe it then if you think it's okay for somebody to be married to a same-sex person.
No, I think we're just interpreting it different, and that's okay, because everybody gets to have their own beliefs. But what I teach my son is that love is love, and we're all human beings.
Wow.
One person that I could actually think, I finally see Amy Klobuchar's point she's been making for so long. That would be a swing voter for Amy Klobuchar right there.
I got to say, that woman who was representing Buttigieg was incredibly patient.
She was trying.
I mean, she did a great job. But the bottom line is, there are bigots. And at one point, when Pete Buttigieg comes out there, this is going to be a question that people are going to ask. Now, I got to be honest with you. Donald Trump's numbers are up. It's hard to know whether it's a function of impeachment. Clinton got a little bit of bump of impeachment. Then it went away 2 months after it. But his trust on the economy is up. There's a whole host of things. Now, part of it could be just the story's not been about him. It's been sort of like, sort of almost like an arm's length, because the impeachment has become its own sort of academic process. And people aren't focused on Trump on some level. And so the level of disgust may be a little bit diminished. I don't know.
I think, but I'm worried about Gallup poll. I just have to say, I think we should not underestimate, like, that's a very good poll for him.
Yeah,
particularly at this time.
And so, you know, I think like the intensity of the question of electability is going to increase. But the fact of the matter is that I think that there is a wide disagreement as to who is electable in the Democratic Party. And this is going to benefit, I think, Bernie, to be honest with you, because there is one person in the race whose support, at the very least in terms of like dropping, is immutable. And that's Bernie's. And I think, like, you know, there's also a ceiling that I think we saw where he wins the popular vote, the first round of voting in Iowa, but the second round goes to Buttigieg. So, but this is going to be nutso, folks. It's going to be nutso.
Bloomberg's going to make a huge play.
Well, Bloomberg can, but the problem that's, you know, Amy Klobuchar hurts Bloomberg.
Pete Buttigieg
hurts Bloomberg.
I don't think Bloomberg is necessarily, again, it's actually another scenario that frankly benefits Bernie. But I'd like to see a few subtle adjustments in the Bernie campaign.
All right, we got just a couple more minutes here before Donald Trump makes it into the room. He's probably going to get there at about 10 of. The impeachment vote, the final vote will be tomorrow. The Republicans are not going to vote to find to convict Trump. And in the Senate yesterday, Joe Manchin called for censure. We don't have to play it. People can trust me on this. He's calling for censure. No president has ever been censured, I think, in the history of the country. Censure is basically a saying like, you did bad, but we're not going to remove you from office because, you know, we're just not going to. I think Manchin is setting up his vote to not impeach the president or convict the president. And he's going to come back to the people in West Virginia and say, I wanted to censure him. But oh, there we go. Here's the president of the United States. Here he comes. All right, I guess we got to look at this.
Do we?
Not really. Let's go back with Susan Collins one more
Susan
thing.
Susan Collins is funny.
And so Joe Manchin, I think, is going to vote. He may split his vote, but I have a feeling he's going to vote no conviction and go back and say, I wanted to do a censure, but they wouldn't allow that. But he should have been censured. That's his safe place. Susan Collins, however, Maine is not West Virginia. I believe Donald Trump's positive negative rating there is -6, I believe, off the top of my head. Maybe it's a little bit less. But people are mad at Susan Collins about Kavanaugh. And Susan Collins has a heartfelt conviction about this. Because if Donald Trump was like willy-nilly, it's almost impossible to say this, willy-nilly going out there saying that, like, he had no contrition whatsoever.
I was unremorseful for
exactly.
I could understand if it was like, I made the best call ever and what I did was great, why you might hesitate.
Right. But in Susan Collins' world, Donald Trump is out there, and guess what? He feels sorry about it.
president's actions wrong, improper, that they showed very poor judgment, in your words. Should the president apologize or acknowledge what he did was wrong?
I think that would be helpful. President Clinton did that in 1999. It took him a while, but finally he did apologize for his actions.
Are you confident that the president won't seek foreign assistance again?
I believe that the president has learned from this case.
What do you believe the president has learned?
The president has been impeached. That's a pretty big lesson. I'm voting to acquit because I do not believe that the behavior alleged reaches the high bar in the Constitution for overturning an election and removing a duly elected president.
But the president says...
Pause it. And if I say it, if I say duly elected as opposed to elected or overturning the will of the people, then magic happens.
She feels bad. May I do what Bill Clinton would do? It's just like, that was the best line in a sexual harassment deposition that ever happened. Yeah. People loved it. They said they got, I got the best intern blowjob that ever happened. Everyone said so. And by the way, it was a very popular move because a lot of people thought I'm going to do it, but I found the chubby girl to do it with and everybody gave me all the credit.
And I will say this, to be fair, Bill Clinton never, ever, ever had oral sex again. He learned his lesson after the impeachment, and he never, ever did it again.
She's totally right.
Whoa, go on a pedophile plane? Certainly not. I am chasing because totally, I was impeached.
She's totally right. I learned that I got impeached for a perfect phone call.
53% of Maine voters said Trump is guilty of abusing the power of his office for his personal benefit by withholding military aid. This is a poll by the Garen Hart Yang Research Group. I don't know. 40% of Maine voters, however, said that Trump is not guilty of abusing power. An additional 7% said they're not sure. So, I mean, if she gets lucky, she'll convince those 7%, and then she'll just be down by 6 percentage points, as opposed to the 13 she's down by now. They're bringing in more of the, is there any more to this that was worth watching or no? No, I don't think so.
I think he doesn't feel happy. As you know, the president's a very introspective person.
He's very, he's very thoughtful. Unbelievable. Well, if we've got a minute here, let's just do this. Here is, Pete Buttigieg. And I think one thing that Pete Buttigieg sort of blew here was that he... Oh, should we play this one instead? Yeah, this is better. I mean, everybody knows that Pete Buttigieg got out there and he was like, I won.
Yeah, spoiler alert, Pete's a rat.
And then later he said, well, I didn't technically win, but maybe I did. I mean, I won with 60% of the vote in. That... what if they stopped counting? Then I won. It's like... it's going to rain later in the baseball game, and if it does, and it's rained out, and I'm ahead, and we play more than three innings, I win. So, meanwhile, speaking of sporting events, Donald Trump held a party at Mar-a-Lago for the Super Bowl.
Sure did.
And apparently, there's nothing better than having a party at your place for the Super Bowl and snorting Adderall beforehand. And here's Donald Trump caught on camera. Honestly, when I first saw this, I thought it was Anthony Adamrick from The President's Show doing like a fake video. And he was just in the distance because it's sort of, you know, it's an iPhone and it's sort of all pixelated. But this is pretty nuts. He's about to sit down. Oh, there you go. That's it. He could not make it through halfway through the Star Spangled Banner without mock, like doing the orchestra, like leading the orchestra. And
it's
then
so boring.
He's going like, hey, I see you. And, you know, here's the thing. He's the president of the United States. He might be thinking that people might be looking at him.
Hey, I know you. You own the massage parlor in Jupiter. I see you.
I think I'm starting to understand why he goes to Mar-a-Lago all the time. Honestly, like we had with George Bush, we had a moment where he choked on a pretzel watching a football game, passed out, and knocked his head. I don't know if you remember this. And the story was he choked on a pretzel, but everybody knows he was on a bender. And I'm quite convinced now that Mar-a-Lago is just basically, you know, his opium den, essentially. And I'm obviously not opium. But I think he goes down there. He's like, I could take Adderall.
To Madame Chang's. And I need my special medicine.
Have you ever seen the Nick?
It's they have it. The Gold Coast boat is coming. It's docking on the Lower East Side. I need
order
it.
The General Tso's chicken, extra spicy. Extra spicy.
I said the Kung Pao shrimp with extra pepper.
You guys remember when George Bush danced during the funeral?
Yeah, I did. Here he is being really appropriate.
Yeah. I'm not too drunk.
I'm not totally. Michelle, literally pulls him. No, Michelle likes him.
Yeah, don't do that.
Michelle's like, you're a little drunk.
Okay, take it easy, George. Take it easy. I'm going to hold your arm here. Yep. Is this was that a funeral?
Yes. That was remember the Dallas police slaying?
Oh, yeah. God. Yeah. Obama was like, I thought I was the one trying to suppress joy.
Jesus. All right, let's see where we are with the State of the Union, shall we? Here we go. Get this crap show started. Oh, here we go. There's Melania. Very excited that she doesn't have to sit with the president tonight.
Yes.
Hello.
All right, should I save the soundboard? Because I'm getting a little bit of juice in it right now, so maybe I can...
It's working, and it's very exciting.
folks. Start drinking. Here's our drinking game for the evening. Drink, and then drink. That's the game. It's not a game, folks. It is not a game, honestly. This is not...
No one knows that. The president's cabinet.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, I think what she meant to say was the president's acting cabinet.
Yeah, the one that matters is me. I'm the only one that matters.
It's just about me. Hey, hi. We arrested a lot of immigrants today. Yeah, I'm destroying the Constitution. You in jail yet? No, not me. There's Ben Carson coming down, completely bewildered.
Like, did somebody send me the opium den?
Is that Betsy DeVos?
Come at anything.
I believe so. Lin Chow, maybe. I think that's Betsy DeVos. Yes, I think so. All the senators have to ask who you are because they're all acting heads of departments, most of them.
Couldn't let anything go by. I had to get revenge.
Jesus.
2016, we had no idea.
Wait, did Stephen Miller come by there?
Ages, man. You see people's feedback loops interrupted. Yeah, you do.
There we go.
What's going on with Fox, by the way? What's going on there?
I really think that we should have, hopefully this is the final State of the Union address.
Of American history?
Of God Billy, yes. But what we should have probably done as is should have created our own. Just completely edited, like a 30-minute speech.
The State of the Majority?
Yeah, but with his voice. And just sort of recreated it.
Somebody's going to have to explain the whole Fox deal to me.
All right, so let's take a guess here. What kind of State of the Union is he going to do? Is he going to mention impeachment? Is he going to mention Iowa? Or is it going to be the very gracious one that we're all going to find horribly boring?
It's going to be somewhere in the middle. There definitely will be, because Republicans are very excited about this one. And, you know, there's going to be some, you know, the same people that want to organize Iowa cannot do want the same people that want to control your health care can't organize a caucus. There are going to be lines like that for sure.
I think it's going to be completely gracious and boring. And
wow.
He's going to introduce
that is the way he usually does it.
He's going to introduce some policies that are going to be, we're going to save Medicaid by cutting it 25%.
Oh, totally. I do think.
But I don't think there's going to be any mention of Iowa.
I don't agree. I think there's going to be mention of competence and how that implicates all of socialism. I think you're going to see that.
We'll see.
But I don't think there will be. I mean, I would love if he got up there and said,
I think
you thought you could impeach me.
Now, here's a question.
But I don't
think the Great American Comeback is what I'm hearing.
The Great American.
Oh, Great American Comeback. Nice.
Comeback kid.
Here's what I'll also say. I am going to bet $5 to anybody who wants to take it quickly that he gives a shout out to Rush Limbaugh.
Limbaugh's there.
Is Limbaugh there?
Limbaugh's there.
They said they were going
to
award
Limbaugh
the presidential.
Next to his wife.
Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, yes. He will get a shout out.
Oh, God darn it. I should have made this bet yesterday. Yeah. I would have made $5.
The President of the United States.
Boo.
A great comeback. In many respects, America's like a predator game show.
Look right? at that. Look at that. Just like Putin wanted. Hey, how you doing? I can't believe it. I'm almost done. Almost done, she's thinking. Please don't win re-election. Please don't win re-election. Time for the divorce. Time for the divorce. How did they get that Tom Barrack to introduce him?
That's for the second term when he starts getting rich friends.
I'm bringing everybody back. Everybody back. I'm so high. What if he gets up there and just says, like, Adderall, the best? Anyways.
Good morning, Patriots. Good morning, Rebels.
Do you increase that?
I increased it.
I was going to say. He's probably there. Don't you think Brandon Straka is there?
Straka's got pride of place right by Ivanka.
Everybody walk away. Everybody.
I know I can trust Ivanka with him.
I'm going to have to fill my cup. Are you not drinking any alcohol?
No, just a green tea.
Why?
Well, let's see how long that goes, because I haven't had any need. As soon as this guy starts talking,
God,
I'll have
I'll
a
be
drink,
right
believe
back.
Me.
just so that, for full disclosure, folks, I'm having a Paloma derivation.
What is that?
Well, Paloma, a legit Paloma is tequila and grapefruit juice and some soda water.
That's a nice drink.
It's a nice drink. I'm just going, I couldn't find any of the, I'm getting like a, one of those like essence of grapefruit soda waters. It's mostly tequila.
It just sounds so ridiculous.
It's Toad music from Mario Kart Wii.
Yeah.
You like me almost as much as the Nationals fans.
Yeah, he's sitting next to him. Oh my God, what have we done to ourselves? Jesus
Members
Christ.
Members of Congress, the President of the United States.
Of course, a lot of liberals watching tonight for to turn some Nancy Pelosi eyebrow raises into a GIF.
Yeah, we've got a whole a team of GIF cutters in yep. the back of the studio.
Yep. Oh, they're doing four
you know,
more
I
years.
Gotta,
so.
I gotta say that I haven't said anything about Rush Limbaugh and his imminent death, and I'm still contemplating about it.
Madam Speaker, Mr. Vice President,
I guess my point is
members of Congress.
There's always a silver lining.
First Lady of the United
and
States.
It's hard to know. Sometimes, what's the silver lining and what's the dark cloud? You know what I mean?
Yep.
I've been
Lonnie
sedated.
Will give you a lap.
I've been sedated. Sedated.
And my fellow citizens.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Well,
here we
here
go.
Here we go. It's
told you.
Boring as hell.
American comeback.
Oh, crap.
Tonight, I stand before you to
I need
share
a drink.
The incredible results.
There you go. Boom. Boom.
Jobs are booming. Incomes are soaring. Poverty is plummeting, crime is falling, confidence is surging, and our country is thriving and highly respected again.
Highly respected.
And they had the worst cover-up ever.
Let's see. It's time
America's
for me to...
America's enemies are on the run.
They're running.
America's fortunes are on the rise.
MF-er, I want more iced tea.
It's blazing bright. The years of economic decay are over.
Say, baby, put down that pipe and get my pipe up.
So I haven't known him that long at all, but...
I have got that one.
The days of our country being used, taken advantage of, and even scorned by other nations are long behind us.
Closer, but no.
Gone, too, are the broken promises, jobless recoveries, tired platitudes, and constant excuses for the depletion of American wealth, power, and prestige. In just 3 short years,
Jesus,
we have shattered
heavily
the
medicated.
Mentality of
heavily medicated.
American decline, and we have rejected the downsizing of Americans' destiny. We have totally rejected the downsizing.
Can I have upper?
Totally rejected the downsizing.
That was Can I have uppers during the Super Bowl?
Just a short time ago, and we are never, ever going back.
Ask the moms.
Never going back. Never. Even if I lose. Oh, God.
I am thrilled to report to you tonight that our economy is the best it has ever been. Our military is completely rebuilt, with its power being unmatched anywhere in the world, and it's not even close. Our
Hello?
Borders are secure. Our families are flourishing. Hello. Our values are renewed. Our pride is restored. And for all of these reasons, I say to the people of our great country and to the members of Congress, the state of our union is stronger than ever before.
Oh, yeah. Come on, man.
That's my
sister every time.
Oh, my God. I think all these Democratic officials are just going like, ugh, can't believe we can't even get a freaking primary off.
This evening demonstrates
right. mind,
how we are
this
building
dude.
The world's most prosperous and inclusive society.
Are you
serious? Hashtag me too.
Every citizen can join in America's unparalleled success, and where every community can take part
success.
In America's extraordinary rise.
Rise.
From
rise.
The instant I took office, I moved rapidly to revive the U.S. economy, slashing a record number of job-killing regulations, enacting historic and record-setting tax cuts, and fighting for fair and reciprocal trade agreements.
Oh, my God.
Our agenda is relentlessly pro-worker, pro-family, pro-growth, and most of all, pro-American.
Bolsonaro.
I tell you, it's going to be a boring one.
Yeah, I agree. I think there might
be run out of drops.
There might be some shot about the Iowa caucuses, but
thank you.
Thank
we
you.
Are advancing with unbridled optimism and lifting
Why
our
can't
citizens.
They just keep them on this drug cocktail.
Every race,
all the time.
Color. Religion and creed, very, very high.
Tremendously so.
Since my election, we have created 7 million new jobs, 5 million more than government experts projected during the previous administration.
What?
I got to check the methodology.
I'm not even sure I understand what that means.
The unemployment rate is the lowest in over half a century. And very incredibly, the average unemployment rate under my administration is lower than any administration in the history of our country. Yeah. If we hadn't reversed the failed economic policies of the previous administration, the world would not now be witnessing this great economic success. The unemployment rate for African Americans, Hispanic Americans, and Asian Americans has reached the lowest levels in history.
What's going on there? Are people hemming and hawing or what?
Maybe a couple of Democrats.
African American youth unemployment has reached an all-time low. African-American poverty has declined to the lowest rate ever recorded.
You guys do not appreciate how great you have it.
In almost 70 years, and last year, women filled 72% of all new jobs added.
I grabbed every single one of them by the vagina. I know where I am. I'm not going to.
I didn't start anything with the wife.
The veterans' unemployment rate dropped to a record low. The unemployment rate for disabled Americans has reached an all-time low. Workers without a high school diploma have achieved the lowest unemployment rate recorded in U.S. history.
And we did that by making sure enough died from opioid overdose so that there was more competition in the labor department and the labor
A record number
market.
Of young Americans are now employed. Under the last administration, more than 10 million people were added to the food stamp rolls, under my administration, 7 million Americans have come off food stamps and 10 million people have been lifted off of welfare.
I'm trying to increase poverty.
Republicans roar. You could hear some Democrats.
You could hear some. Yeah, there was something going on.
Louis Gohmert. That's so fantastic. We've thrown a lot of people up.
Yeah, sorry. That's Purdue, Sonny Purdue, scumbag ag secretary in charge of that. It's one of the great
Fox
evil
and Friends
things.
Tomorrow morning. Nancy Pelosi didn't even applaud for lower unemployment rate.
I guess they want people on food stamps.
Out of the workforce. In just 3 years of my administration, 3.5 million people, working age people, have joined the workforce.
He's going to be hard to beat, folks. You got to start realizing, like, he's a freak and a weirdo and everything, but
since
this is going to be a normal election.
The net worth of the bottom half of wage earners has increased by 47%, three times faster than the increase for the top 1%.
Oh, he's me. He's dealing with the top.
Yeah.
Yep, here he goes.
There you go.
I'm worried about Bernie.
After decades of flat and falling incomes, wages are rising fast, and wonderfully, they are rising fastest for low-income workers who have seen a 16% pay increase since my election.
Here's the thing, folks. Every single thing he has done tonight is something he cannot do in a debate.
That's right.
And that's why they use this speech, because this is going to be the only time you're going to hear this. Occasionally,
this
in speeches, he'll come up with something you can remember.
Blue collar boom.
People got to start really getting serious about how hard it's going to be to beat him.
Real median household income is now at the highest level ever recorded. Since my election, U.S. stock markets have soared 70%, adding more than $12 trillion to our nation's wealth, transcending anything anyone believed
was possible.
Well,
to be fair, 20% of our nation's
wealth. This is a record. It is something that every country in the world is looking up to. They admire. Consumer confidence has just reached amazing new highs. All of those millions of people with 401ks and pensions are doing far better than they have ever done before, with increases of 60, 70, 80, 90, and 100% and even more. Jobs and investments are pouring into 9,000 previously neglected neighborhoods thanks to Opportunity Zones, a plan spearheaded by Senator Tim Scott. As part of our
who's an African American? Oh, look at Sinema. Look at Sinema. Standing applause from Kristen Sinema. That's going to be a big move. And Trump sounds like Jack Kemp here. Sounds like the old, like, compassionate conservative spiel. This is Convention 2000
stuff.
Wealthy
people and companies are
pouring
money into
I think they're making a concerted effort to appeal to
investment in many decades
to black voters.
Well, again, it's the same thing that we always talk about. That's why the Super Bowl ad was so smart. It's a signal to some other people. I'm not actually a white supremacist who kidnaps children, even though obviously he is, who's empowered Stephen Miller. And also, you know what? If you don't feel that urgency and you stay home, cool. And if I shave 2%, great.
From Cincinnati, yep. Ohio. After struggling with drug addiction, Tony
it's another
lost
reason
his
why,
job, his house, and
again,
his family.
It's not about civility
homeless,
and tone. You got to actually be on stage and say, you kidnap children. Like, you want to talk about this stuff?
He is
stuff?
Now a top tradesman, drug-free, reunited with his family, and he is here tonight. Tony, keep up the great work, Tony.
This is the ad. This is a very specific strategy. They better really, oh man, they gotta get some. And it's amazing, because if he calls for legalizing weed, and it's anybody besides Bernie, because even Buttigieg has a police department problem. That's incredible. I mean, there's so many traps here with this guy.
Thank you, Tony.
And if he wasn't so unpopular and weird, though, frankly, any other president would, I think, pretty much be a lock for re-election.
Given many former prisoners the ability to get a great job and a fresh start. This second chance at life is made possible because we passed landmark criminal justice reform into law. Everybody said that criminal justice reform couldn't be done, but I got it done, and the people in this room got it done. Criminal justice reform is done. Beautiful package. Wonderful. They don't even mention my name. So stupid. So stupid. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
So stupid. So stupid.
Thanks to our bold regulatory reduction campaign, the United States has become the number one producer of oil and natural gas anywhere in the world, by far.
We are going to burn up the planet. We're going to do it faster and better.
With the tremendous progress we have made over the past 3 years, America is now energy independent, and energy jobs, like so many other elements of our country, are at a record high.
Folks, hit the subscribe button right down there. Right down there on your the corner of your screen.
We are doing numbers that no one would have thought possible just 3 years ago. Likewise, we are restoring our nation's manufacturing might, even though predictions were, as you all know, that this could never, ever be done. After losing 60,000 factories under the previous two administrations, America has now gained 12,000 new factories under my administration, with thousands upon thousands of plants.
The other day, Donald Trump said that Ivanka herself was responsible for creating 15 million new jobs.
At Chinese sweatshops?
Well, he didn't get specific because there's not been 15 million new jobs under his administration. I'm close.
Companies are not leaving. They are coming back
children
to the USA.
In Vietnamese factories making polyester.
The fact is that everybody wants to be where the action is, and the United States of America is indeed the place where the action is.
America, where the action is.
I didn't start anything with the wife.
One of the promises I made to the American people was to replace the disastrous NAFTA trade deal.
There you go. Good job, Pelosi.
Yep.
In fact, unfair trade is perhaps the single biggest reason that I decided to run for president. Following NAFTA's adoption, our nation lost 1 in 4 manufacturing jobs. Many politicians came and went pledging to change or replace NAFTA, only to do so, and then absolutely nothing happened. But unlike so many who came before me, I keep my promises. We did our job.
Oh. There you go.
So smart to give him that win.
Six days ago, I replaced NAFTA and signed the brand new U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement into law. The USMCA will create nearly 100,000 new high-paying American auto jobs and massively boost exports for our farmers, ranchers, and factory workers.
Oh. Clap, please.
It will also bring trade with Mexico and Canada to a much higher level, but also to be a much greater degree of fairness and reciprocity. We will have that fairness and reciprocity. And I say that finally, because it's been many, many years that we were treated fairly on trade.
Folks, farmer bankruptcy is up 20%.
Major trade deal in
that is
years
including
the
$20 billion that have already
unions.
Been paid out to them. This is a slush fund.
I also promised our citizens that I would impose tariffs to confront China's massive theft of America's jobs. Our strategy has worked. Days ago, we signed the groundbreaking new agreement with China that will defend our workers, protect our intellectual property, bring billions and billions of dollars into our treasury, and open vast new markets for products made and grown right here in the USA. For decades, China has taken advantage of the United States. Now we have changed that. But at the same time, we have perhaps the best relationship we've ever had with China, including with President Xi. They respect what we've done
cake.
Because, quite frankly,
Xi.
They could never really
believe
that
cake,
they were
and I
able
said,
to
I'm
get away
bomb them.
With what they were
and
doing
he understood.
Year after year, decade after decade, without someone in our country stepping up and saying, that's enough.
Brandon.
Now we want to rebuild our country, and that's exactly what we're doing. We are rebuilding our country. As we restore
our
American leadership throughout the world, we are once again standing up for freedom in our hemisphere.
Oh, right.
That's why my administration reversed the failing policies of the previous administration on Cuba.
Cuba. Cuba.
We are supporting the hopes of Cubans, Nicaraguans, and Venezuelans to restore democracy. The United States is leading a 59-nation diplomatic coalition against the socialist dictator of Venezuela, Nicolas Maduro.
Socialist dictator.
This is going to come up, Bernie, soon.
You know, though, the other night, Chris Matthews said, like, you heard what he said about Maduro?
Yeah.
Nobody gives a shit.
Well, Chris Matthews, you know,
I met a dock worker in 1971. We had a coffee. And he loved Ed Muskie. And he also, people don't like to hear this, but he loved Franco. And he liked both of them. That guy wouldn't vote for Bernie. And I hope people are listening.
Who carries with
my imaginary friend wouldn't vote for Bernie.
Of all Venezuelans.
My imaginary friend who died 5 years ago.
Even my imaginary friend is dead.
He was 65 in 1971.
Please take this message back.
Juan Guaido.
Who are they talking
to? Juan Guaido. Guaido.
Is that Guaido, really?
That's Guaido.
Oh, jeez.
That's Pete Guaido. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
This is super solid that I spent all the other stuff you gave
me
on Coke. So it's cool that I'm
jumping
here.
Over the fence and not making it.
Thanks, bro. I know the rest of the money went to Coke.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Oh,
right on
shut
it. Thank
the
you very
fuck
much.
Off.
Wait, you calling him
Please
Mr. President?
Take this message
yes.
back that all Americans are united with the Venezuelan people in their
as far as I can tell, nobody in
freedom.
Venezuela
Thank
considers him the president.
President.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine? Can you imagine if Hillary Clinton went down to Venezuela and was feted as the president of the United States?
It's just, it wouldn't even. I mean, it's. I'm trying to. I guess it would be Pelosi. But at a lower rank. I mean, yeah, it would be. We all know what it would be. It would be I mean, that was the thing in the interview with Lula. He made all the
socialism,
you know, the points about U.S.
nations,
interference, but there was this gap.
But always remember,
of like,
freedom.
This guy is just saying he's president.
The soul.
How does that work?
Right.
To safeguard American liberty, we have invested a record-breaking $2.2 trillion in the United States military.
Oh, Jesus.
We have purchased the finest planes, missiles, rockets, ships, and every other form of military equipment, and it's all made right here in the USA. We are also getting our allies, finally, to help pay their fair share. I have raised contributions from other NATO members by more than $400 billion and the number of allies meeting their minimum obligations has more than doubled. And just weeks ago, for the first time since President Truman established the Air Force, more than 70 years earlier, we created a brand new branch of the United States Armed
Space
Forces.
Space Force.
It's called the Space Force.
Finally, it gets exciting.
Space Force.
Oh, the Space Force, another thing the Democrats gave him.
In the gallery tonight, we have a young gentleman and what he wants so badly, 13 years old, Ian Launfay. He's an eighth grader from Arizona. Ian, please stand up. Ian has always dreamed of going to space. He was the first in his class and among the youngest at an aviation academy. He aspires to go to the Air Force Academy, and then he has his eye on the Space Force.
Space Force.
As Ian says, most people look up at space. I want to look down on the world.
This young man wants to shoot laser beams from space onto the Chinese, and he will.
Ian tonight is his greatest hero of them all. Charles McGee was born in Cleveland, Ohio, one century ago. Charles is one of the last surviving Tuskegee Airmen, the first black fighter pilots, and he also happens to be Ian's great-grandfather.
They know how to do this.
He's 100 years old. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's good.
Black power.
Black power. Tuskegee. Ungawa Tuskegee. I knew Jim Brown.
Incredible story.
I did blow with OJ.
130 combat missions in World War II. He came back home to a
I used to say Nicole upsets you a lot. A lot.
And to serve America in Korea and Vietnam.
I said, "Whoa, well, Nicole, December 7th, maybe you should stop Charles upsetting him so much." Unbelievable.
100th birthday.
Thank you, Carson, for telling us some crazy stories.
A few weeks ago, I signed a bill promoting Charles McGee to Brigadier General.
They're going to spend like a half an hour on this
today,
guy.
Yeah,
they are.
I pinned the stars on his shoulders in the Oval Office. General McGee, our nation salutes you. Thank you, sir.
Oh, you're going to make him get up again? There you go. One more time.
Make Limbaugh stand up this many times.
Yeah, exactly.
And now, Rush, I'd like you to come down here and see me. Just walk down. Oh, wait. Go back up, Rush.
Everybody keep clapping until Rush
Everybody keep
here.
Clapping while Rush moves.
From the pilgrims,
pretend
the
that the podium is a Dominican teenager.
Forge,
you're
to
moving
the
towards it, Rush.
Selma, and from President Lincoln to the
His
Reverend
pants remind me of
Martin
Michael
Luther
J.
King,
Fox playing Dan
Americans
Quayle on SNL. I don't know if I ever saw that.
Our children's future.
Michael J. Fox
Members
played
of Congress,
Dan Quayle
we must
on
never
SNL.
Forget
that,
was,
oh, I ever,
that the only victories that matter
funny.
In Washington are victories that deliver.
Donate
oh,
to
yeah.
Lisa
American
Savage,
people.
A Green for Senate, up against the least popular Susan Collins. Maine has ranked choice voting, by the way. That allows you to vote for the Green candidate without it being a spoiler situation, folks. Lisa for Maine.
The people are the heart of our country. Their dreams are the soul of our country.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
their love is what powers and sustains
I'm
our country.
I'm talking about love.
We must always remember that our job is to put America first.
Put America first. Love. Yeah. Everybody's going to love.
Including the haters.
Look at all of them. They hate America. Hate America.
And where it should have stopped is at the deal standpoint. Building an inclusive society is making sure that every young American gets a great education and the opportunity to achieve the American dream. Yet for too long, countless American children have been trapped in failing government schools. To rescue these students, 18 states have created school choice in the form of opportunity scholarships. The programs are so popular that tens of thousands of students remain on a waiting list. One of those students is Janiyah Davis, a fourth grader from Philadelphia.
I'm
Janiyah.
Not racist. It's okay to vote for me.
Wow. They are nakedly going after...
It's smart.
Black vote. It is pretty smart. Of course.
You got to realize you're running against George W. Bush 2000 for re-election without being in Iraq.
She would do anything to give her daughter a better future. But last year, that future was put further out of reach when Pennsylvania's governor vetoed legislation to expand school choice to 50,000 children. Janiyah and Stephanie are in the gallery. Stephanie, thank you so much for being here with your beautiful daughter. Thank you very much.
Your poor daughter is going to grow up and realize that she was exploited as a propaganda piece.
I have to say, this is the worst because it's him, but the whole kid thing is weird.
I am pleased to inform you that
even for laudable stuff, just a little weird.
I can proudly announce tonight that an opportunity scholarship has become available. It's going to you, and you will soon be heading to the school of your choice.
It's Jack Kemp. This is all Jack Kemp.
This is Oprah and Jack Kemp.
Oprah,
he's just
Jack
like,
Kemp.
I just gave away a car, and it's you.
Yep.
We invited you today. Look under your seat. And you are going to get to go to this school. Meanwhile, we're going to destroy the schools in inner Philadelphia.
Now I call on Congress to give 1 million American children the same opportunity Janiyah has just received. Pass the Education Freedom Scholarships and Opportunities Act, because no parent should be forced to send their child to a failing government school.
Government school. Public school. Wonder who did that focus testing. Government school. Call it a government school.
Every young person should have a safe
and secure environment in which to learn and to grow.
For this reason, our magnificent First Lady has launched the Be Best initiative to advance a safe, healthy, supportive, and drug-free life.
I am best hooker in all of Kazakhstan.
Online, in school, and in our communities.
She honestly, I just feel like at any moment she could pull out like a huge
for America's children. Thank you very much.
Sniper rifle with the silencer and just take them out.
Is that a wish fulfillment fantasy or a speculation?
Well, no, I would never do that. That would be illegal to have that.
No, you. Oh, even in your own recesses of your own imagination.
That she
my administration
takes a gun out
is determined to give
president.
Our
well, I was thinking if you wrote it as a script,
need,
as an example.
As a script,
like I was thinking if you're going to get back into the film business,
right?
Through our pledge,
and it was a follow-up to Bad Situation,
over 400 companies will
where
also
you also had some really
jobs
interesting
and
imaginative exercises taking place.
To almost 15 million
bring up
Americans.
The,
my budget also contains an exciting vision for our nation's high schools.
Probably not.
Tonight, I ask Congress to support our students and back my plan to offer vocational and technical education in every single high school in America.
I feel like they're doing fewer pan shots on people
I am also proud that
we achieved record and
permanent funding for our nation's historically black colleges and universities.
Can I get a witness?
What was the name of the speech? The Come Black Kid? What was it that he was?
The most affordable, innovative, and high quality.
I mean, it's smart. He's
very smart.
You know, he knows that if
Before
he can just
office,
not have
premiums had more than doubled in just 5 years.
You know, if
years,
you can just pick up 1 or 2 percentage points, like you say,
to provide
that
affordable
is
alternatives.
And the
our
permission
new plans
giving
are up to 60% less expensive and better. I've also made an ironclad pledge to American families. We will always protect patients with pre-existing conditions.
Ooh, that's a lie. Oh, that's a beauty of a lie right there. That's just a lie.
I mean, what is fascinating about this is he has gobbled up so much of the terrain in terms of policy. I mean, look, the policies he's talking about do not.
Always.
Talking about protecting Social Security, there you go. I mean, they are boxing out any moderate Democrat.
Should never be blindsided by medical bills. That is why I signed an executive order requiring
he would absolutely
price
obliterate
transparency.
Bloomberg
price
or
transparency. So when you get charged $10,000. To go to the ER, you'll know it.
Many experts believe that transparency, which will go into full effect at the beginning of next year, will be
after
even bigger
I'm
than healthcare
reelected
reform. It will save families massive amounts of money for substantially better care. But as we work to improve Americans' health care, there are those who want to take away your health care, take away your doctor, and abolish private insurance entirely.
Everybody knows you're
132 lawmakers in this room have endorsed legislation to impose a socialist takeover of our health care system, wiping out the private health insurance plans of 180 million very happy Americans.
Oh, that's
great.
For those
watching at home tonight, I want you to know we will never let socialism destroy American health care.
Is Pelosi going to applaud for that like she did for Guaido?
Over 130 Ooh. Legislators in this chamber have endorsed legislation that would bankrupt our nation by providing free taxpayer-funded health care to millions of illegal aliens, forcing taxpayers to subsidize free care
for anyone
in
the world
who unlawfully crosses our borders. These proposals would raid the Medicare benefits of our seniors and that our seniors depend on, while acting as a powerful lure for illegal immigration. That is what is happening in California.
And then after you explain to moderate voters or overlords defining them that you're not this pig racist, then you can lean into the fears that incorrectly but do exist.
Sounds fair to you, then stand with the radical left. But if you believe that we should defend American patients and American seniors, then stand with me and pass legislation to prohibit free government health care for illegal aliens.
There it is.
This will be a tremendous boon to our already very strongly guarded southern border, where, as we speak, a
the
long, tall, and very powerful wall is being built.
It's falling over. Did we read that story about the wall? Because of the floodings, they're going to have to build, like, multiple basically
we have now completed over 100
doors
miles and have over
in the wall, big doors,
fully completed
every mile
in a very short
to allow
period of time.
Flood waters and like debris to go through.
Substantially
like
more than
make the wall for like 6 months out of the year.
I don't care.
Completely permeable.
Who cares?
Also taking on
I
well,
did it.
Big pharmaceutical
on the board.
Companies.
We it's called
the
honeypot.
A record number of affordable generic drugs and medicines are being approved by the FDA at a faster clip than ever before.
You know, one of the things that Trump has been able to do is he's, because the Republicans now are untethered from any sort of like
and I was pleased
consistent ideology, he can lie about all this stuff. Without even creating, worry about creating the sort of the desire for these things.
And working together, Congress can reduce drug prices substantially from current levels. I've been speaking to Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa and others in Congress in order to get something on drug pricing done and done quickly and properly. I'm calling for bipartisan legislation that achieves the goal of dramatically lowering prescription drug prices. Get a bill on my desk, and I will sign it into law immediately.
What's this?
With unyielding commitment, we are curbing the opioid epidemic.
What were they saying?
Dreamers? Was it Dreamers?
Drug overdose deaths declined for the first time in nearly 30 years. Among the states hardest hit, Ohio is down 22%, Pennsylvania is down 18%, Wisconsin is down 10%. And we will not quit until we have beaten the opioid epidemic once and for all. Protecting Americans' health also means fighting infectious diseases. We are coordinating with the Chinese government and working closely together on the coronavirus outbreak in China. My administration will take all necessary steps to safeguard our citizens from this threat. We have launched ambitious new initiatives.
We will use this to test new programs to track and terrorize immigrants
and those struggling with mental health. And because Congress was so good as to fund my request, new cures for childhood cancer, and we will eradicate the AIDS epidemic in America by the end of this decade.
Oh, he's taking the old Joe Biden, we're going to get rid of cancer thing.
We're going to do cancer.
Biden took that from him.
Cancer.
Biden
and
took that from Trump.
Almost every American family knows the pain when a loved one is diagnosed with a serious illness.
H.R. 3 was the Democratic bill on drug...
Here tonight is a special man, beloved by millions of Americans, who just received a stage 4 advanced cancer
diagnosis. Mentioning Limbaugh.
Diagnosis.
Yeah, this is him.
This is not good news, but what is good news is that he is the greatest fighter and winner that you will ever meet. Rush
really?
Limbaugh. Thank you.
Fighter and winner, you ever meet. The guy blew his hearing out from opioids. I don't know if I'd call that winning. Yeah.
Well, he's finally been able to shed that weight. folks, no one. Well, I'm sure there's somebody. But it's a real race.
And Rush,
be real competition to find somebody who's done more damage to this country over the course of the past 34 years.
Supposedly, Iowa results are dropping at 10.
That you speak
so
to and that
keep
you
an
inspire,
eye out.
And all of the incredible work that you have done for charity.
Oh, with the charity. Oh, all of these people with the friggin' charity.
civilian honor, the Presidential Medal of Freedom.
Oh, you got to be effing kidding.
You got the Medal of Freedom?
They announced this was like known 2 hours ago.
He might not
so
know.
So now he's pretending. He's pretending.
This is embarrassing.
This is so embarrassing.
He knew. He knew it was going to happen.
This was announced.
This is embarrassing.
Do I look like I didn't know? I mean, that's what I'm trying to do. That's what he's saying. Oh.
They just told me I was going to come in there.
Ladies and gentlemen, I had no idea. Watch a little, little play acting.
I will now ask.
I haven't reached a spiritual peak like this since terrorizing teenagers in the Caribbean.
With the honor, please.
You got to be effing kidding me. Here you go, ladies.
Melania's going to give him a lap dance. Just the same way Samuel L. Jackson offered Robert De Niro, Bridget Fonda, and Jackie Brown. I'm doing the same for Rush right now. Mm-hmm. Oh, it'll be a good Vic Berger video.
Yeah.
On the bright side.
Yeah.
Well, I thought that the first section of this speech was terrifyingly effective. And I think that this is the goofiness of this is hopeful is it's not diminishing it, but it's taking
Rush
it down
Limbaugh.
A few notches. All right, we get it, you fat fuck. You sit down.
Hey, to be
sorry.
Fair,
sorry, he's lost
some
his weight.
Weight.
Fair.
He's lost some weight. He's lost
fair. Yes.
Congratulations.
I'd like to talk to you about a fantastic new product, cancer.
Next, I want to... next.
I struggled for many years to rate him
next, I
want
to give the Congressional Medal of Honor to Mark Levin.
Yeah, right.
And to
that guy's such a misery.
Sean Hannity and to Steve Ducey.
21 weeks and 6 days.
It's coming if he gets
and
reelected.
Less than a pound.
Now, if Bernie's president...
was a born fighter. Through the skill of her doctors and the prayers
this
of her parents,
this is just amazing.
Little Ellie kept on winning the battle of life. Today, Ellie is a strong, healthy 2-year-old girl sitting with her amazing mother, Robin. In the gallery, Ellie and Robin, we are glad to have you with us tonight.
You ever notice how the Tuskegee Airman looks like a most wanted picture? Oh, sorry.
Thanks to modern medical wonders, 50% of very premature babies delivered at the hospital where Ellie was born now survive. It's an incredible thing. Thank you very much. Our goal should be to ensure that every baby has the best chance to thrive and grow just like Ellie. That is why I'm asking Congress to provide an additional $50 million to fund neonatal research for America's youngest patients.
I have always been about neonatal research. This is what it is. It's Oprah, right?
Totally,
it's just like,
yeah.
Look under your seat, $50 million. There you go.
That's why I'm also calling upon members of Congress here tonight to pass legislation finally banning the late term abortion of babies.
It's a wish list. Everybody, look under your chair and you will find a repressive theocracy.
Whether we are Republican, Democrat, or independent, surely we must all agree that every human life is a sacred gift from God. As we support America's moms and dads, I was recently proud to sign the law providing new parents in the federal workforce paid family leave, serving as a model for the rest of the country.
I think somebody's saying BS.
Now I call on Congress to pass the bipartisan Advancing Support for Working Families Act, extending family leave to mothers and fathers all across our nation. $40 million American families have an average $2,200 extra thanks to our child tax credit. I've also overseen historic funding increases for high-quality child care, enabling 17 states.
I mean,
to help
all
more
this
children,
stuff sounds good, although that it is BS.
Wait lists altogether.
But it shows they're positioning themselves well.
And I sent Congress a plan with a vision to further expand access to high-quality child care and urge you to act immediately. To protect the environment, days ago, I announced that the United States will join the 1 trillion trees initiative, an ambitious effort to bring together government and private sector to plant new trees in America and all around the world.
Yeah, it's the nice trees in the park. Nice trees.
A lot of trees.
That's a great. Who is that congresswoman? We got to find that is the meme of the evening right there.
We must also rebuild like, America's idiot. Infrastructure.
I want to know who that congresswoman is. Someone please tweet me.
It's Infrastructure Week, everybody.
It's Arbor Week, everybody.
I ask you to pass Senator John Barrasso's highway bill to invest in new roads, bridges, and tunnels all across our land. I'm also committed to ensuring that every citizen can have access to high-speed internet, including and especially in rural America.
People in West Virginia should be able to look at Moscowite porn just like anybody else.
I mean, he is, populist, sort of like laying out a populist.
Bannon's back.
Americans also requires
that would be my speculation.
Keep America safe. That means supporting the men and women of law enforcement at every level, including our nation's heroic ICE officers.
Here's back to the base. It's interesting that the base stuff
this
comes
is
later,
also,
later
this is
in the
also
speech.
Also going after Bernie.
Yep.
Abolish ICE.
Yep.
Last year, our brave ICE officers arrested more than 120,000 criminal aliens charged with nearly 10,000 burglaries, 5,000 sexual assaults, 45,000 violent assaults, and 2,000 murders. Tragically, there are many cities in America where radical politicians have chosen to provide sanctuary for these criminal illegal aliens. In sanctuary cities, local officials order police to release dangerous criminal aliens to prey upon the public instead of handing them over to ICE to be safely removed. Just 29 days ago, a criminal alien freed by the sanctuary city of New York was charged with the brutal rape and murder of a 92-year-old woman.
Jesus.
The killer had been previously arrested for assault, but under New York sanctuary policies, he was set free. If the city had...
What? I am so sure that this story is not true.
His victim would still be alive today. The state of California passed an outrageous law declaring their whole state to be a sanctuary.
What?
Sanctuary. The drugs are wearing off.
Total sanctuary.
With catastrophic results. Here is just one tragic example. In December 2018, California police detained an illegal alien with 5 prior arrests, including convictions for robbery and assault. But as required by California's sanctuary law, Local authorities released him. Days later, the criminal alien went on a gruesome spree of deadly violence. He viciously shot one man going about his daily work. He approached a woman sitting in her car and shot her in the arm and in the chest. He walked into a convenience store and wildly fired his weapon. He hijacked a truck and smashed into vehicles, critically injuring innocent victims. One of the victims is a terrible, terrible situation.
Oh, he's
died,
losing it now.
51-year-old American named Rocky Jones. Rocky was at a gas station when this vile criminal fired 8 bullets at him from close range, murdering him in cold blood. Rocky left behind a devoted family, including his brothers, who loved him more than anything else in the world. One of his grieving brothers is here with us tonight. Jody, would you please stand? Jody, thank you.
This is horrible. This poor guy. I don't know. I'm sure there's a history of how this human prop thing started, but it's pretty gross.
Jody, our hearts weep for your loss, and we will not rest until you have justice. Senator Tom Tillis has introduced legislation to allow Americans like Jody to sue sanctuary cities and states when a loved one is hurt or killed as a result of these deadly practices. I ask Congress to pass the Justice for Victims of Sanctuary Cities Act immediately. The United States of America should be a sanctuary for law-abiding Americans, not criminal aliens.
So what do you want on?
In the last 3 years, ICE has arrested over 5,000 wicked human traffickers, and I have signed 9 pieces of legislation to stamp out the menace of human trafficking domestically and all around the globe. My administration has undertaken an unprecedented effort to secure the southern border of the United States. Before I came into office, if you showed up illegally on our southern border and were arrested, you were simply released and allowed into our country, never to be seen again. My administration has ended catch and release.
Yeah, catch and release was for people who were absolutely safe in the system. It was actually a policy of not prioritizing targeting nonviolent people. I mean,
now,
you know, you just have to try to.
We catch the kids, we keep the kids.
Right. From our country.
Now we catch them and kidnap them, abuse them, and hold them in
Very
concentration camps, their
we
parents.
We entered into historic cooperation agreements with the governments of Mexico, Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala. As a result of our unprecedented efforts, illegal crossings are down 75% since May, dropping 8 straight months in a row. And as the wall rapidly goes up, drug seizures rise, and the border crossings are going down and going down very rapidly. Last year, I traveled to the border in Texas and met Chief Patrol Agent Raul Ortiz. Over the last 24 months, Agent Ortiz and his team have seized more than 200,000 pounds of poisonous narcotics, arrested more than 3,000 human smugglers, and rescued more than 2,000 migrants. Days ago, Agent Ortiz was promoted to Deputy Chief of Border Patrol, and he joins us tonight. Chief Ortiz, please stand.
And he's Hispanic. That's the whole play right there.
One more non-white,
and an ICE officer, that's like... And Colonel Goldberg has helped us with all of our efforts from the beginning.
a grateful nation.
It's not about religion.
Thank you and all of the heroes about citizenship. Of Border Patrol and ICE. Thank you very much. Thank you. To build on these historic gains, we are working on legislation to replace our outdated and randomized immigration system with one based on merit, welcoming those who follow the rules, contribute to our economy, support themselves financially, and uphold our
values. It is
values.
Funny that in addition to, like, the approach is totally classist and race-based, but even here, like, what he's actually starting to push forward is not isolationism. It's basically what Boris Johnson is doing. It's like, look, if you're rich, come.
Working with Senate Majority Leader
or white
Mitch McConnell.
I mean, thank you, Mitch. There's huge overlap, but emphasis on rich. I mean, that's where you can actually write the rules,
the Senate,
you know.
We have confirmed a record number
of people from Nigeria and Saudi.
87 new federal judges to uphold our Constitution as written. This includes two brilliant new Supreme Court justices.
He added Nigeria to the ban list.
Yes. Nigeria's got very, very high education rate.
Right. Well, that's what I was thinking of, the education rate. I didn't realize he added it to the ban list. I wonder who turned down, like, a cell phone license or something.
Ask the moms. Ask the moms.
And we ask the moms.
In the pipeline.
We're in the pipeline. In other words, can't wait for some of you to die in front of me. Liberty,
and that includes the constitutional right to pray in public schools. In America, we don't punish prayer. We don't tear down crosses. We don't ban symbols of faith. We don't muzzle preachers and pastors. In America, we celebrate faith. We cherish religion. We lift our voices in prayer, and we raise our sights to the glory of God. Just as we believe in the First Amendment, we also believe in another constitutional right that is under siege all across our country. So long as I am president, I will always protect your Second Amendment rights to keep and bear arms. In reaffirming our heritage as a free nation, we must remember that America has always been a frontier nation. Now we must embrace the next frontier.
Total frontier.
America's manifest destiny in the stars. I am asking Congress to fully fund the Artemis program to ensure that the next man and the first woman on the moon will be American astronauts, using this as a launching pad to ensure that America is the first nation to plant its flag on Mars.
Mars, bitches.
Who cares anymore? Like, being the first. Like,
we gotta be the first on Mars.
If we get to Mars, I don't care whose country it is. It's awesome.
Strongly
this isn't
defending
the Cold War.
Our national security. Right. And
gotta be America.
That, stupid
gotta
Islamic
be America first,
terrorism.
Or we're blowing up the whole planet. Anybody else gets us before there, we nuke it.
Last week,
that's
I
what
announced
the Space
a groundbreaking
Force is
plan for peace between Israel and the Palestinians. Recognizing
a proposal
that
for permanent
failed,
apartheid.
We must be determined and creative in order
I
to
spent 45
the
minutes on the kid who wants to join Space Force.
A better future.
But let me talk about this whole
ago,
Palestinian-Israel thing for 35 seconds.
Held over 20,
finished, did it,
miles of territory
done.
In Iraq and Syria. Today, the ISIS territorial caliphate has been 100% destroyed, and the founder and leader of ISIS, the bloodthirsty killer known as al-Baghdadi, is dead.
I think someone should do a fact check on that ISIS 100%
destroyed. ISIS is just done.
We are joined this evening by Carl and Marcia Mueller. After graduating from college, their beautiful daughter, Kala, became a humanitarian aid worker. She once wrote, "Some people find God in church. Some people find God in nature. Some people find God in love. I find God in suffering. I've known for some time what my life's work is, using my hands as tools to relieve suffering." In 2013, while caring for...
She owns a massage parlor. Just a little
Kayla
joke.
Kayla was kidnapped, tortured, and enslaved by ISIS and kept as a prisoner of al-Baghdadi himself. After more than 500 horrifying days of captivity, al-Baghdadi murdered young, beautiful Kayla. She was just 26 years old. On the night that U.S. Special Forces operations ended al-Baghdadi's miserable life, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark Milley, received a call in the Situation Room. He was told that the brave men of the elite Special Forces team that so perfectly carried out the operation had given their mission a name, Task Force 814. It was a reference to a special day, August 14th, Kayla's birthday. Carl and Marcia, America's warriors never forgot Kayla, and neither will we.
Thank you. I hope if something horrible happens to my child, that it is commemorated by naming an assassination squad or assassination after her.
What I mean, this is like bread and circus fascism, and I'm not. And again, it's even worse because he's pulling. Like, I couldn't imagine anything worse. So he's having people who have these truly horrifying.
Well, Bush did a lot of this too.
I'm sure Bush did. Yeah.
In uniform demonstrate the infinite depth of.
Well, this is really reminding me. I mean, this is very George W. Bush.
One of these American heroes was Army Staff Sergeant Christopher Hake. On his second deployment to Iraq in 2008, Sergeant Hake wrote a letter to his one-year-old son, Gage. "I will be with you again," he wrote to Gage. "I will teach you to ride your first bike, build your first sandbox, watch you play sports, and see you have kids also. I love you, son. Take care of your mother. I am always with you, Daddy."
Boy,
on Easter Sunday of 2008, Chris was out on patrol in Baghdad when his Bradley fighting vehicle was hit by a roadside bomb. That night, he made the ultimate sacrifice for our country. Sergeant Hake now rests in eternal glory in Arlington, and his wife, Kelly, is in the gallery tonight, joined by their son, who is now a 13-year-old and doing very, very well. To Kelly and Gage, Chris will live in our hearts forever. He is looking down on you now. Thank you.
Very effective. Oh.
And that is why I'm going to launch another ground war in Iran.
Thank you very much. Thank you both very much. The terrorist responsible for killing Sergeant Hake was Qasem Soleimani.
You got that?
Who provided
the
deadly roadside bomb that took Chris's life.
All right.
Soleimani was the Iranian regime's most ruthless butcher, a monster who murdered or wounded thousands of American service members in Iraq. As the world's top terrorist, Soleimani orchestrated the deaths of countless men, women, and children. He directed the December assault and went on to assault U.S. forces in Iraq, was actively planning new attacks when we hit him very hard. And that's why last month, at my direction, the U.S. military executed a flawless precision strike that killed Soleimani and terminated his evil reign of terror forever. Our message to the terrorists is clear. You will never escape American justice. If you attack our citizens,
50
you forfeit
U.S.
your life.
Servicemen received traumatic brain injuries from the response from the Iranians.
In recent months,
so I hope the value of that Soleimani attack
raise their
was
voices against their
sufficient.
Oppressive rulers. The Iranian regime must abandon its pursuit of nuclear weapons, stop spreading terror, death, and destruction, and start working for the good of its own people. Because of our powerful sanctions, the Iranian economy is doing very, very poorly. We can help them make a very good and short-time recovery. It
short
can all go very quickly, but perhaps
recovery.
They are too proud or too foolish to ask for that help. We are here.
I wish Vic Burke
could edit
this in
real
time.
Let's see which road they choose. It is totally up to them. As we defend American lives, we are working to end America's wars in the Middle East. In Afghanistan, the determination and valor of our warfighters has allowed us to make tremendous progress, and peace talks are now underway. I am not looking to kill hundreds of thousands of people in Afghanistan, many of them totally
innocent.
Don't
make
me kill
these innocent
people. It is also not our function to serve other nations as law enforcement agencies. These are warfighters that we have, the best in the world, and they either want to fight to win or not fight at all. We are working to finally end America's longest war and bring our troops back home. War places a heavy burden on our nation's extraordinary military families, especially spouses like Amy Williams from Fort Bragg, North Carolina, and her two children, 6-year-old Eliana and 3-year-old Rowan. Amy works full-time and volunteers countless hours helping other military families. For the past 7 months, she has done it all while her husband, Sergeant First Class Townsend Williams, is in Afghanistan on his fourth deployment in the Middle East. Amy's kids haven't seen their father's face in many months. Amy, your family's sacrifice makes it possible for all of our families to live in safety and in peace, and we want to thank you. Thank you,
and
Amy.
You can't imagine the incredible way we're monetizing that. We're making so much money. And so your misery is not in vain. I'm so rich now because of you. Look, you get to have my wife touch you.
But Amy,
and I'm
there is
wealthy.
One more thing. Tonight we have a very special
surprise.
Rush
wants to call you a slut.
I am thrilled to inform you that your husband is back from deployment. He is here with us tonight.
Look under your seat. I'm the Oprah.
This has turned into like the Trump Taj Mahal, Atlantic City, like variety.
It's a fucking like Oprah.
Patriot variety.
He's been doing the whole thing all night. $50 million for your program. You're going to get the money. And here's your husband. Look it. I've improved the lives of 5. So let's overlook the immiseration of thousands upon thousands.
Welcome back to the Sunset Strip, Washington, D.C. for a night of variety.
It's going to poll well, though.
Good morning, Patriots. Good morning, Rebels.
Who's laughing now, Sam?
shit. You know what's depressing? Is that might have come full circle in a way.
Hello, this is Mitt Romney.
You can give
you
me
have
a, Biden,
a wonderful
please.
Day, bro, and I'll see you again soon.
Give me a bite, will you?
Welcome home, Sergeant Williams. Thank you very much.
As the only lifeguard in the project.
As the world bears witness to me,
the other one.
America is a land of heroes.
Did a hell of a job of your job. This is good.
Their destinies are forged and where legends come to life. This is the home of Thomas Edison and Teddy Roosevelt.
Thomas Edison.
Of many great generals, including Washington.
Oh, my God.
Patton and MacArthur.
MacArthur.
Is Edison a military man?
Yes. And Edison, who designed the light bulb bomb.
Harriet Tubman.
Tubman.
Brothers,
great. Harriet.
Neil Armstrong. Great. And so many more.
Harriet Tubman, who didn't exactly look like Tyra Banks, like but she did some great things.
Davy Crockett.
Danny Crockett
Oakley.
Was one.
This is the place
Daniel
where the
Boone.
Pilgrims landed at Plymouth. And there where Texas Patriots made their
pilgrims.
Last stand at the Alamo.
There was
John Wayne.
Johnny Appleseed.
John Wilkes Booth. Oh, wait,
the
sorry.
Nation was carved out of the vast
Lincoln was a Republican,
toughest,
by the way.
Strongest, fiercest,
that guy from Silence of the Lambs.
Ever to Hannibal on the face Burris. Of
the earth.
The tenor, Andrea Bocelli.
The wilderness settled the Wild West. Lifted millions
settled
from
the Wild West,
disease and hunger.
Committed a little gentle genocide.
They did it with blankets. They did it with blankets.
It was unbelievable. So what they did was they because you think you go in with guns and rockets and you kill it, but you say, hey, you feel it a little cold? Gave him a blanket.
Want to lie down? Let's make this comfortable.
How about you lay down and rest, Mr. Native American? Here, take a nap, Engine Joe. And it had smallpox.
Who can forget Helter Skelter? Who can forget Helter Skelter?
I mean, it's amazing when you look at history.
Jim Jones didn't happen in America, but he was American.
It was so in Guyana.
We get that.
This is our glorious and magnificent inheritance.
Unabomber. Anybody? Remember him?
Pioneers. David Koresh, great guy.
Yeah, the Unabomber whose passionate world. Commitment to
we
nature we still
world,
think of
and
today.
And we change history forever by embracing the eternal truth that everyone is made equal by the hand of Almighty God.
God.
Yeah.
Oh, Timothy McVeigh. I forgot that guy.
Timothy McVeigh, not exactly a looker,
America
but a very brave guy.
Can
took a lot of bravery.
America
took a lot of courage, a lot of
where
guts.
Anyone can rise. And here, on this land, on this soil, on this continent, the most incredible dreams come true.
Jay.
This nation is our canvas, and this country is our masterpiece. We look at tomorrow and see unlimited
we painted it with blood. We painted
just
it in blood. It's
explored.
True. Lot of red.
Our
lot of red.
Discoveries
but also some shit color.
It's
our
good
most
for your
thrilling
pores.
Stories
blood is actually
are not
very
yet
good
told.
For your pores.
Our grandest journeys.
You know, you can really start to tell when these drugs start to wear off.
The American
it's
age,
gonna,
the American
so
epic,
the American epic.
The American adventure.
Oh my God!
Has only just begun.
Our we're spirit just is still at young. The beginning.
The sun is still rising.
Soon we can get rid of all non-white wealthy people
and my fellow Americans,
and we can make this country what it was supposed to
is
be.
Yet to come. Thank you. God bless you. And God bless America. Thank you very much.
I asked Jerry and I asked some of the folks because I hear this is a major theme right here. But 2 Corinthians, right? 2 Corinthians 3:17. That's the
my favorite. Oh, Nancy Pelosi tears up the speech. There she goes.
Ooh.
Garbage. Garbage. There she is. She just won the election, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, very deep.
She repudiated fascism.
Very deep stuff right there.
I'm going to tear up your speech. And in other news, would you like to negotiate a trans-Pacific trade deal?
That's right. Yeah. I tear up your speech. And I signed your legislation.
Yes. I tear your speech and I give you everything you want in it.
And I asked Jerry and I asked some of the folks, because I hear this is a major theme right here, but 2 Corinthians, right? 2 Corinthians, 3:17. That's the whole ball game.
It's the whole ball game.
Let's switch. What's going to be the most annoying to watch, right? I mean, we know, should we look at CNN or should we look at MSNBC? CNN? Yeah, MSNBC is going to be too painful, right?
Yes. It's all painful.
No, they won't. They don't care. We can take a couple of clips. They just worry about the...
stream?
They just worry about the live the streams. They don't care about their shows. So, folks, I mean, there it is. You know, I think we got a preview of what he's going to run on.
Oh, yeah.
But... let's be clear, in the context of a one-on-one election with somebody, he's not going to be able to get away with it. But we clearly have a sense of what he thinks is going to resonate. And the, you know, the big ones that you hear people talk about quite a bit, allowing prisoners to vote, abolishing ICE.
Yep.
Providing health care for undocumented immigrants. The tough one now, made tougher by Joe Biden and Pete Buttigieg, is the private health insurance. But that debate I would welcome, because I think the vast majority of Americans, when they hear the other side of that, are going to feel okay about it. I do think the vast majority of Americans, when they hear the idea of prisoners voting, it's not... I am not expressing my opinion here, but I think the majority of Americans are against that. I think the majority of Americans, probably to the extent that they are engaged in the issue, are against the idea of abolishing ICE. Now, legislatively, there are things that you can do and get away with because of the level of which people place priorities on these issues that become a liability electorally. In other words, you are never going to win an election on net neutrality, for instance. However, when it actually comes up in the course of governance, all you needed was 3 million committed people, and that's a lot of people to write into the FCC. And at least during the Obama administration, they make net neutrality reality. There is a difference between something that has salience as an electoral issue and something that is doable in a legislative or in a governance perspective. So those are our liabilities there, I think. Yeah, let's go and see what they're doing here.
From Philadelphia. We've seen the type of thing where a war
who is giving
like
the response?
Tuskegee,
do we know?
Brigadier General,
I have no clue.
McGee. We've seen that.
Are they
cute?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to look at Bernie's, right?
I mean, with his grandson who wants to be...
Here's Jake Tapper talking about the...
President Trump, Gretchen Whitmer,
telling a little girl that
Michigan
she's going to get a scholarship. President Trump announcing that there is a soldier coming home and reuniting with his wife and children.
Here he comes, ladies and gentlemen. It is your life. I mean, that is like, this is...
That the First Lady bestowed upon Rush Limbaugh.
Did that happen in Idiocracy? Because I didn't see that movie. If I did, it was a long time ago, but it should have, right?
Of who this president is, which is somebody from the world of reality television, where he was trying to have these... moments,
but I, again,
for the American people,
I mean,
to experience, and it worked.
That
a lot.
Is
I'm sure it will resonate with a lot of Americans.
It's enough to be.
I think at the end,
a generic Democrat.
It started definitely, and I think at the end, it started to, you know, become, you know. But again, that's I'm still going through my bias. People might have liked that. I thought by the end it was a little excessive in all of the like. you can do two or three of those, and then by the sixth or seventh, I think everybody's maybe a little bit like, okay, we get it. But the first 45 minutes of that speech, no, and, I'm, and as I say, I'm probably
in chapter
wrong.
Seven of Blaming of the Electorate. I can tell you that we go over look, very extensively look, it's a the value
yeah.
of look under your seat. There's your husband. And therefore, all of the other U.S. servicemen who are dying and killing other civilians, irrelevant.
Well, and also another example that made me think of is I watched a documentary once on Reaganism. And it was good. It was a critical treatment of what he did to the safety net in terms of increasing poverty. But one of his defenders, I believe, I forget who said, they had this anecdote where basically Reagan was watching TV at the White House and he saw a news report on a family that was immiserated because of his policies. So he was so, but he was upset. He sent them a personal check. And the whole big takeaway for this guy was like, that was the kind of guy he was.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think, you know, there's a lot of that dynamic and it is really effective. And I just hope, I think when you go out and you talk to more people and you look at polls, it's not that Trump is popular. I don't think he's definitely not popular, but I do think that he is not, there's a cult that loves him. And there's certainly a contingent that totally...
He has 94% favorability amongst Republicans.
Well, that's what and I also think... And if you look at these new Gallup numbers, I guess my point is I think there actually is a contingent of people, and it's not that many people because there isn't that many people that are up for grabs. But I think there's a fair amount of people that could be pivotal who are not convinced by him.
And grateful that you're
this is
tuning
the
in.
Governor,
I'm Gretchen Whitmer, the 49th governor of the great state of Michigan. Tonight, I'm at my daughter Sherry and Sydney's public school, East Lansing High School.
All right, that's good.
We're
You're
here
going
today
after
with
DeVos.
Families and parents, teachers, and most importantly, students. I want to thank you all for coming. But tonight, I'm going to talk to those of you who are watching at home. I'd need a lot more than 10 minutes to respond to what the president just said. So instead of talking about what he is saying, I'm going to highlight what Democrats are doing.
I would highlight
After
what
all,
he's doing.
You can listen to what someone says,
that's
but
where
to
he
know
was going.
The truth, watch what they do. Okay. Michiganders are no different from Americans everywhere. We love our families and want a good life today
now,
and a better life tomorrow for our kids.
I had in-laws in Michigan.
We
that's
work
not
hard,
true. They
and we
not.
Expect our government to work hard for us as well. We have grit and value loyalty, and we still root for the Detroit Lions. We and all Americans might be weary of
she
today's
should hit him
politics,
on trade.
But we must stay engaged.
We can.
Our country, our democracy, our future demand it. We're capable of great things when we work together. We cannot forget that despite the dishonesty and division of the last few years, and that we heard tonight from the President of the United States, together we have boundless potential. And young Americans are proving that every day by taking action. That's what I want to focus on tonight. Monty Scott is 13 years old and lives in Muskegon Heights, Michigan. Monty's street was covered in potholes. They were ankle deep, and he got tired of waiting for them to get fixed. So he grabbed a shovel and a bucket of dirt and filled them in himself.
Oh, come on.
During Let me tell you about the failure of government.
Fix the damn roads. Because blown tires and broken windshields are downright dangerous. And car repairs take money from
rent. Are you?
This is what they do every fucking
we,
year,
the Democrats,
Sam. This is what they do. I'm sorry to have an outburst, but
in
this is
Illinois,
always
J.B. Pritzker
what they do.
Passed a multi-billion
this
dollar
is tested.
To rebuild their roads
This is
bridges.
Generic. I get
governor
it.
Phil Murphy
it's a woman governor who's from a Republican state that
right,
Trump
she's
won.
She's talking
All
about
the country,
Democratic governors
are rebuilding
are
bridges,
doing
fixing roads, expanding broadband, and cleaning up drinking water.
Oh,
Everyone
you
in this country benefits when we invest in infrastructure. Congressional Democrats have presented proposals to keep us moving forward. But President Trump this, and the
we are not moving
in the Senate
forward, though.
Are blocking
this would
the
be
path.
Literally the only time.
When it comes to infrastructure,
could you just at least for this
Monty
one just say he's a corrupt
a
liar? You can't believe a word he says.
The Republicans in D.C. have with the Oval Office and the U.S. Senate.
Oh, Lord.
Bullying people on Twitter doesn't fix bridges. It burns them. Our energy should be used.
I don't know if that's
true.
There's a lot of how many focus groups have been like,
I'm projecting myself.
Healthcare is personal, for sure, not political. When I was 30, I became a member of the sandwich generation. That means I was sandwiched between two generations of my own family for whom I was the primary caregiver.
Except for it happened to me 18 years later.
Caring for my newborn daughter, as well as my mom at the end of her brain cancer battle.
Gretchen Whitmore here. Bad timing, Sam.
And during the day, I had to fight my mom's insurance
company. In Michigan, we get married at 19.
Chemotherapy.
You know, wait until we're in our deep into our 30s,
you idiot. It exposed the harsh
realities
of our workplaces, our healthcare system, and our childcare system.
Have your second kid when you're...
And it changed me. I lost
almost on Social Security.
You're
a freaking idiot.
And no action. Yeah. So as a state senator, I worked with a Republican governor and legislature to expand health care coverage.
You know what?
To more than 680,000 Michiganders under the Affordable Care Act.
This
today,
is the
Democrats
most unforgiving,
Montana,
horrible slot to ever have.
And lowering costs.
And she is
Kansas,
not.
Governor Laura Kelly's working across.
Hurting herself.
To bring Medicaid coverage to tens of thousands. In New Mexico, Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham enshrined ACA protections into law.
Every but I hate to Democrat say it, the only one of these I ever remember and the only one I ever saw that I felt like actually did. Yeah.
Every one of them has supported the Affordable Care Act with coverage for people with pre-existing conditions.
Was
they
last year Kennedy?
Plans,
and Kennedy was horrible.
But I mean,
you know, Stacey Abrams
President
and then
Trump
Kennedy the last 2 years,
plan.
They both were nothing. I mean,
he's
I think this was
the
probably
to
better.
Rip those life-saving protections away.
But she's not
it's
talking
simple.
To us.
Democrats are trying to make your health care better. Republicans in Washington are trying to take it away. Think about kids like 17-year-old Blake Carroll from Idaho, who organized a fundraiser to pay for his mom's colon cancer treatment. Or 19-year-old Ebony Myers from Utah, who sells art to help pay for her own rare genetic disorder treatment. No one should have to crowdsource their health care. Not in America. But the reality is, not everyone in America has a job with health care and benefits. In fact, many have jobs that don't even pay enough to cover their monthly expenses. It doesn't matter what the president says about the stock market. What matters is that millions of people struggle to get by or don't have enough money at the end of the month after paying for transportation, student loans, or prescription drugs. American workers are hurting. In my own state, our neighbors in Wisconsin and Ohio, Pennsylvania, and all over the country, wages have stagnated while CEO pay has skyrocketed. So when the president says the economy is strong, my question is, strong for whom? Strong for the wealthy who are reaping rewards from tax cuts they don't need? The American economy needs to be a different kind of strong. Strong for the science teacher spending her own money to buy supplies for her classroom. Strong for the single mom picking up extra hours so she can afford her daughter's soccer cleats. Strong for the small business owner who has to make payroll at the end of the month. Michigan invented the middle class, so we know. If the economy doesn't work for working people, it just doesn't work. Who fights for working, hardworking Americans? Democrats do. In the U.S. House, Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Democrats passed a landmark bill on equal pay, another bill to give 30 million Americans a raise by increasing the minimum wage, and groundbreaking legislation to finally give Medicare the power to negotiate lower drug prices for America's seniors and families. Those three bills and more than 275 other bipartisan bills are just gathering dust on Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's desk. Senator McConnell, America needs you to move those bills. Meanwhile, Democrats across the country are getting things done. Pennsylvania's Governor Tom Wolf is expanding the right to overtime pay. Michigan is too. Because if you're on the clock, you deserve to get paid. Nevada Governor Steve Sisolak and North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper are working to give hard-working teachers a raise. And speaking of the classroom, Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers unilaterally increased school funding by $65 million last year. In Colorado, Governor Jared Polis has enacted free all-day kindergarten. And in 29 states, We've helped pass minimum wage hikes into law, which will lift people out of poverty and improve lives for families. That's strength. That's action. Democracy takes action. And that's why I'm so inspired by young people. They respond to mass shootings, demanding policies that make schools safer. They react to a world that's literally on fire with fire in their bellies, to push leaders to finally take action on climate change. They take on a road filled with potholes with a shovel and some dirt. It's what gives me great confidence in our future. And it's why sometimes it feels like they're the adults in the room. But it shouldn't have to be that way. It's not their mess to clean up. It's ours. The choices we make today create their reality tomorrow. Young people, I'm talking to you and your parents and grandparents. Democrats want safe schools. We want everyone to have a path to a good life, whether it's through a union apprenticeship, a community college, a four-year university, without drowning in debt. We want your water to be clean. We want you to love who you love and to live authentically as your true selves. And we want women to have autonomy over our bodies. We want our country welcoming and everyone's vote counted. 2020 is a big year. It's the year my daughter Sherry will graduate from high school. It's also the year she'll cast her first ballot, along with millions of young Americans.
Thank you, Sherry.
The two things are connected, because walking across a graduation stage is as important as walking into the voting booth for the first time. Her future, all our kids' futures, will be determined not just by their dreams, but by our actions. As we witness the impeachment process in Washington, there are some things each of us, no matter our party, should demand. The truth matters. Facts matter. And no one should be above the law. It's not what those senators say. Tomorrow, it's about what they do that matters. Remember, listen to what people say, but watch what they do. It's time for action. Generations of Americans are counting on us. Let's not let them down. Thank you for listening. God bless America.
I'll tell you something.
Good night.
And I say this as someone who...
Michigan Governor Gretchen
when
Cooper,
they hear a Michigan accent of Union, because of my own personal journey.
I was going to say, do you want us to try to get a contact for her?
When I hear a Michigan accent because of my own personal journey, I am immediately, repulsed. Is a little, so I just like, I not, it's not the first thing that says like, hey, I will, that says, hey, you know, this is something that you should listen to.
Hi, Gretchen.
I'm copping to my priors. All right.
Hi, Gretchen.
I'm copying to my priors.
Yes. Respect.
She, I have to say, if I was the, I don't know who I would be in the Democratic Party, but I would say we need 2 weeks to do a little bit more training in terms of like delivery. We need to work on the audio quality there. It's a little compressed.
Mm-hmm.
Hearing a little bit of like what the mouth is doing. But that was for, I mean, that is the death spot. I mean, nobody comes out of that spot except for Webb, which happened, you know, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years ago almost now. And
it was like catastrophic for like Bobby Jindal and.
Oh, and Marco Rubio?
I mean, Rubio was still able to, like, do something in the presidential race.
Are you kidding with the water?
No, it was really bad. It was a meme. But Bobby Jindal, I think you could literally trace
that. Destroyed Jindal.
Yeah, he was done.
But I've seen a lot of these, and they've been awful.
Yeah.
She is in contention now for the VP spot.
Yeah.
There is no doubt about it. I mean, Michigan, she's won in Michigan. And, you know, there was... She hit the whole, I mean, she is not, I doubt her politics are as left as I would want, but in terms of, from a rhetorical perspective, she is hitting all of the, she's hitting all of it. A sort of broad conceptual notion of like how you define a successful economy. the notions of, she's also hitting like the impeachment and the resistance issues. She's hitting, you know, the education issues and hitting healthcare issues. She was walking a tightrope there. Like, if you can tell me right now that she rejects Medicare for all or supports Medicare for all, I would insist you prove it to me.
Yeah.
Because you can't. She kept the door open there she basically stated the broad principles that you want from healthcare, which is people should have access to it. It should be affordable. It shouldn't be a problem for people. And that's exactly, I mean, it indicates to me that she's a smart politician and is keeping the door open as to, like,
no, I mean,
Buttigieg, Sanders.
I would look into, I mean, you know, certainly if you want to look into her, she actually, you know, she was challenged by a guy whose name's escaping me at the moment, but who was a fantastic candidate who ran on single payer and actually had a plan for how to implement it in Michigan.
Oh, yes, I interviewed
Bernie
him.
Surrogate,
yeah,
right?
Yes.
What was his name?
He's a Bernie surrogate. He's a doctor.
But he was a doctor. I mean, he is a Bernie surrogate.
Without
a
doubt.
But regardless, I mean, I think clearly, like, there's a couple of different ways of measuring this.
Yes, Abdul Sayed.
Yeah. Abdul Sayed. I don't know if this was so good that people are going to be talking about it,
tomorrow. No.
But I think it's like a solid base hit, and she did not. I mean, you're totally right. It, from the perspective of mostly, it's bad for people. I don't see how
she fought universal healthcare. Like, I don't know.
She would
her.
Generically be on everybody's radar. And now she kind of just confirmed it through actually showing up and being solid.
I'm saying
it's a good performance.
And I would say, you know,
for sure.
Generically speaking, right? I think there needs to be, and particularly since we have no, you know, as far as we can tell at this point, viable candidate of color for president, that I think it's going to be necessary to have representation on the ticket, someone of color. But I think, you know, it may not be this year, may not be 8 years from now, but she's going to be a national candidate at one point, I think.
Yeah.
And I'm not, you know, like, I am just this is just analysis. It's not necessarily who I would choose.
As Bernie Sanders says, Sam clearly has a massive crush on Gretchen Whitmore.
I don't.
It's a Michigan thing.
I can't.
I'm just kidding.
I
no,
can't.
No, I mean, obvious, of course, unless something. I mean, the thing is like, you never, who knows? Maybe there'll be some like type of weird pension scandal that will happen in a couple of weeks. But
right.
That from everything we see, I mean, yeah, she clearly has a lot of chops and she did well in that spot. I wish they would start thinking of how to use that spot more offensively, frankly. But, you know, because I think it's good for her.
Here's
as a
the problem
politician.
They have
I don't think it's good for the Democratic
Party. And we're going to see it. Now, Bernie is going to be much more comfortable in this. But, you know, one of the challenges of that response is, like, how do you do it? Do you do it in a small room and make it seem intimate so they can go right into the camera and get in your face? But then you seem small relative to what we just saw with the president. Do you go into a big room and
Bashir in the diner is what I always think of.
That was
right.
So
that
was a disaster.
Donald Trump.
That right, here's Bernie's speech.
And what I believe will be his very last State of the Union address.
Get it, Bernie.
Bernie people got to turn the gain down on this outputs. To
give me more gain. I want more heat in my headphones.
President Trump said, and equally important to what he did not say, and what we must do together to create an economy and a government that works for all of us, not just the 1%. As all of you know, tonight and on many other occasions, President Trump has told the American people that the economy today is booming like it has never boomed before.
This is great. Let's do this.
Well, in truth, for Trump and his billionaire friends, he is right. The economy is really booming for them. In fact, the wealthiest people in our country have never, ever had it so good. and we are now experiencing more income and wealth inequality than any time in the last 100 years. In America today, the three wealthiest people in our country own more wealth than the bottom half of American society, while at the same time, 500,000 Americans are homeless, including 30,000 veterans. In America today, the top 1% earn 49% of all new income, while half of our people are living paycheck to paycheck, struggling to pay the rent, to put food on the table, to provide childcare for their kids, or even to go to the doctor. In America today, hundreds of thousands of bright young people cannot afford to go to college. Millions are struggling with outrageous levels of student debt. All the while, President Trump wants to make massive cuts to Pell Grants and other educational programs. And this is what Trump really means when he talks about a booming economy. This is what he really means. Since he has been in office, billionaires in America have seen their wealth increase by $854 billion, a 37% increase. In other words, the very, very, very rich are becoming even richer. Meanwhile, wages for the average American worker have gone up by all of 17 cents an hour.
Well, 17
over
cents.
The past year, right, after adjusting for
that's
inflation.
Walter Block action right there.
An increase of less than 1%.
Exactly.
Here
but
is
your
Trump's
401k went
booming
up.
Economy. A 37% increase in the wealth of billionaires, a 1% increase in real wages for American workers. And thanks to Trump, for the first time in the history of this country, this is quite unbelievable, but billionaires now pay a lower effective tax rate than the average working person in this country.
'Cause I'm smart.
Do you believe that? And profitable corporations like Amazon did not pay a nickel of federal income taxes last year, while they're owned by the wealthiest person in America.
Deep state.
When Donald Trump was a candidate for president, he promised the American people that the wealthy would not benefit at all under his tax plan. We all remember that. Not the wealthy will not benefit. In fact, only the middle class and working families would benefit from his tax plan. He lied. As President
this
Trump,
is the only way to run against him.
Trump signed
I'm
a
sorry.
Tax bill that provides 83.
I don't see another way of running against him.
Of all just, benefits
he hasn't had the quips.
Right.
The top
what about the clever asides about his hair
Donald
in the blizzard?
Trump said he would
that's how you do it.
Good luck with your hair in a blizzard.
Like Michigan, yeah, exactly.
Because my hair, there's Indiana, nothing to laugh about when it shakes.
He lied. Since Trump has
this
been in
it.
Office, over 170,000 American jobs have been shipped overseas. We are now in a manufacturing recession. And the NAFTA 2.0 deal that he recently signed
and that all these other idiots support because they don't even have any strategic
from
sense.
From shutting down factories in the United States and moving them to Mexico where workers are paid less than $2 an hour. We can and will do much better than a Trump-negotiated trade deal.
This is it. And a great rebuke of Warren.
No, President Trump, this is not the strongest economy we've ever had. When 87 million Americans are uninsured or underinsured, and millions of Americans have lost their health insurance, President Trump, since you have been in office. This is not a booming economy. When the pharmaceutical industry continues to rip off the American people by charging us the highest prices in the world by far for prescription drugs, and when one out of five Americans can't afford the medicine their doctors prescribe. Can you imagine that? People go to the doctor, they are sick, and they can't even afford to fill the prescriptions their doctors prescribe. In his remarks tonight, Donald Trump talked about the need for America to have the, quote, most affordable, innovative, and high-quality healthcare system on earth. He continued, we will always protect patients with pre-existing conditions, end quote. Really?
This is great.
How gullible do you think the American people are? This is the same president. Good. Who came one vote away from throwing 32 million Americans off the health care they have and ending the Affordable Care Act's protection for pre-existing conditions. This is also the president who, in his last budget, proposed a $1.4 trillion in cuts to Medicaid and $845 billion in cuts to Medicare. This is not a booming economy when half of older Americans have no retirement savings and no idea how they will ever be able to retire with any shred of dignity. Now, as important as it is to respond to some of what President Trump said tonight, it is equally important to discuss what Trump refused to talk about. In the year 2020, how can a president of the United States give a State of the Union speech and not mention climate change? How do you give a speech, State of the Union speech, and not mention climate change when the leading scientists of the world tell us that climate change is the greatest existential threat facing humanity, and that they, as scientists, have actually underestimated the speed and the severity in which climate change is wreaking havoc on our country and the entire world? I did not hear President Trump say one word about what it means when Australia is now on fire because of severe drought, and about the unprecedented level of flooding and extreme weather disturbances that we are experiencing. And he failed to talk about how many American communities could be underwater in the next century as a result of rising sea levels. By ignoring and, in fact, exacerbating the crisis of climate change, President Trump is turning his back on the children of America and on future generations, and dooming them to live in a planet increasingly unhealthy and uninhabitable. It is truly sad that we have a president of the United States who lacks the courage to stand up to his billionaire friends in the fossil fuel industry. Tonight, I didn't hear Donald Trump say one word about gun violence or the epidemic of mass shootings that we have experienced in recent years. Together, the American people want strong policies.
What was that glitch?
Now, if I might, let me share a little bit of good news with you. And that is that after traveling around this country, I am more confident than ever that the American people want a government that is based on the principles of justice and compassion, not greed and corruption. Great. Instead of throwing 32 million Americans off of their health insurance, as Trump wants to do by repealing the Affordable Care Act, the American people understand that health care is a human right and not a privilege. And that we must expand Medicare to cover every man, woman, and child in this country through a Medicare for All single-payer program. Now, Donald Trump may not like government health care, but Medicare is the most popular health insurance program in this country, and the time is long overdue for expanding it to cover all of our people. Tonight, President Trump talked about his desire to preserve Social Security. Funny, that's not what he said last month when he was in Davos with his billionaire friends.
This is great.
And talked about
run against the establishment,
to cut
baby.
Back on entitlement programs. So we say to the president, instead of trying to cut Social Security, we must expand Social Security benefits.
I'd like him to use that same frame with cutting
so
the ACA and expanding
senior
Medicare.
Citizen in this country can live Smart. With the dignity they deserve.
Maybe some people
and every
could
American
get that message
with
out.
A disability can live with a security they need.
That's a really good idea. He just released a very good plan for people with disabilities as well in the last couple of days.
Instead of more tax breaks for billionaires and Wall Street
and
executives,
about it, basically
we are going
people,
to raise
I mean,
the minimum wage to a
live,
living wage, $15
mostly,
an hour.
Most humans are simply temporarily able. Those issues will affect every human being. Mostly.
We are going to provide equal pay for equal work.
Everybody's got an audio issue.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah. And we are going to make it easier for workers to join unions. Instead of giving massive tax breaks and subsidies to the fossil fuel industry, as Trump is doing, we are going to enact a tax on Wall Street speculators so that we can make public colleges and universities tuition-free and cancel all student debt in America.
Looks like his internals for Iowa
corporate
look
welfare,
good.
That's the what large companies like that are shipping our jobs overseas. We're going to stop providing lucrative federal contracts to corporations that are outsourcing American jobs to low-wage countries. Instead of demonizing the undocumented, we are going to pass comprehensive immigration reform and a path toward citizenship for the undocumented. And on day one, we are going to restore the legal status of the 1.8 million young people eligible for the DACA program. And in the richest country in the history of the world, we must not continue having more people in jail than any other country on earth because of a broken and racist criminal justice system. We need to invest in our young people, in jobs and education, not more jails and incarceration. And when we talk about criminal justice...
Hi, I'm Mike Bloomberg. He isn't as rich as me, and you people should stop using e-cigarettes.
And legalize
I'll see you in November.
In every state in this country. Yes, tonight we have heard Donald Trump talk about deregulation and getting government off the backs of the American people. But if Trump believes that we have to get government off the backs of the American people, then he must understand, and his colleagues and friends must understand, that it is women who must control their own bodies, not the government.
This is really sad. All of it.
If we are serious about transforming our country, if we are serious about rebuilding the middle class, if we are serious about economic, racial, social, and environmental justice, we must end the divisiveness that Donald Trump is fomenting. We must bring our people together, black and white, Latino, Native American, Asian American, gay and straight, and create a government based on the principles of justice. This is an unprecedented moment in American history. Let us go forward together. Thank you all very much.
Good speech.
Yeah, that's
one of the best. Does he have a teleprompter there?
I don't see one.
Jane's holding up a notebook in the front row.
Flash cards.
He's flash in the midst cards. Of a campaign, and you get this speech down. But did he just... Oh, no, there's a teleprompter. Okay,
yeah,
I was going to say.
Teleprompter.
That would have been...
I'm only human.
Well, I that would have been, honestly, like freakish. If he was doing that all by memory.
Yeah, this was like,
no, check this out, Sam. The top 1% of the top 2%.
I can't even remember
the 3rd%.
The opening of the show, and I've done it now for...
Yeah, you did.
6 years in a row, I think.
Well, that would be on the other end.
Right, right.
That was great.
That was a good speech.
That was... That might... That could be the best one I've seen him give, actually. I mean, he's not, you know, he's never bad, but he's not like the best speaker ever. But that was very, I think it's good. I think he's got it. The humor, the smiles, the air quotes. It's important.
It does feel that he is, there's a couple of things I've noticed in terms of what Bernie has been doing in terms of his speeches. Just like as we get closer to Iowa and in the wake of Iowa, is he seems to be sort of like, trying to be a little more presidential.
Definitely.
A little bit more low-key.
Yep.
You know, he's only going to be so low-key, but he's being a little bit more low-key.
I had to go through this myself.
He also seems to be showing a little bit more of his sense of humor.
Yeah, which is really important.
This moment, and I was surprised because I thought a lot of people would pick up on this. And when I went to MSNBC... I mentioned it, and, you know, when I get on MSNBC, somebody had tweeted out, like, I like waiting up at night for when Chris Hayes is allowed to bring his friends over to his dad's house, and there could be a couple of, like, progressives on. Honestly, it was literally
come
it's
on,
past 10
code
o'clock.
In the fridge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, we just got to go straight down to the basement, all right, and then we can smoke some pot. And I said it
then
to
you
Hayes.
You can talk about the app. Then you can make a critical comment about the app business.
In 2004, you know, I think Hayes was, I mean, he was writing at the time, but he didn't remember this. I remembered this quite a bit. And I noticed that at first I thought it was weird. And then I realized what he was doing in real time the other night. Here is Bernie Sanders, the way that he finished his speech in Iowa. And I mean, I sort of mentioned it last night. So if you're watching the coverage, you would get this. But here's Bernie Sanders finishing his speech in Iowa last night. And then I will show you, this is perhaps one of the driest, subtlest, well-done comedy bits that I've seen in a long time from a politician. Here we go.
It's a moment for the real heads, basically.
Yeah, I mean,
this is for all the real heads out there.
That's right. End of his speech.
Together with the strongest grassroots movement this country has ever seen, where we have knocked on hundreds of thousands of doors here in Iowa, we're doing it in New Hampshire. So let me conclude by thanking our great staff, our volunteers here in Iowa. And now it is on to New Hampshire, Nevada, South Carolina, California, and onward to victory. Hey. Thank you all very much.
Just
now, let
himself.
Me show you what the joke he's playing here. This is Howard Dean, who they had comparable campaigns insofar as, I mean, let's put aside ideology and politics. Howard Dean was the first person to raise money over the internet, essentially, and to do it in small donations, and to have, at least in the internet era, an army of volunteers. And here is what he came in third, I think it was, in the Iowa caucuses.
Yeah, I was going to say, thank God Bernie did better.
Right. And there was a lot of other factors, but this was the nail in his coffin. This is how petty our politics were at that time. Hold on, we're going to go back.
I think this would play well today.
It's a different era.
You know something? You know something? If you had told us 1 year ago that we were going to come in third in Iowa, we would have given anything for that. And you know something? Not only are we going to New Hampshire, Tom Harkin, we're going to South Carolina and Oklahoma and Arizona and North Dakota and New Mexico. And we're going to California and Texas and New York. And we're going to South Dakota and Oregon and Washington and Michigan. And then we're going to Washington, D.C. to take back the White House.
Yeah! I mean, it's goofy, but like... It's just so stupid that that would sink somebody. That's actually very... That's the most likable I've seen Howard Dean in over a decade.
Well,
he's a misery on television now.
I understand. I mean, because you now have seen where he goes. But I mean, contemplate the idea, folks, that that was the nail in the coffin of his campaign. That... And...
When we hit, there's going to be a patron level on my show where I will recreate this.
I have no doubt you will monetize it, but but the
it's got to go on the soundboard.
But I got this feeling that Bernie, I don't think he planned that joke. I think as he started going like, "We're going next to New Hampshire," then he realized like, "I'm not gonna do it. I'm not gonna do the whole thing."
But you could tell by his facial expression, he was definitely thinking about it.
He was amusing himself.
He definitely was thinking about it, and I thought that was pretty. I gave that extra points. Yeah. And that's why I say he won the Iowa caucus, regardless of what the numbers are.
We're still at 62%, I guess.
Yep.
They still have not released it. This is unbelievable.
Quality
control.
There is a, this whole thing with the 62%, the fact that they have released these numbers on some level, like they must have been aware that they could only go to 62% because it has been almost... 6 hours, 8 hours. They must have been aware that this is the best they were going to do, and they decided we're going to release part of it now. That's messed up.
I mean,
in my opinion,
I think it. Of course, it's messed up, and I mean, regardless of anything else, and I look at these things the way you look in terms of. I mean, there is such a thing as criminal incompetence, frankly, but I think that if. Where I'm conspiratorial and feel comfortable being conspiratorial, I think that if there was a sense that Buttigieg had won a convincing victory or Biden crushed it, I don't necessarily think that we'd be seeing these types of delays.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No, I don't.
I mean, right now, Buttigieg is in the lead.
Absolutely. But I mean...
But the district's still out.
But the district's still out indicate Bernie. I mean,
I think
this is
sheer incompetence
super weird.
Is
well, and then I like the other question though is then it's like how do we get to sheer incompetence? And I think that is what you pointed out very well
earlier.
Yeah,
I think those things are coincidental in the sense that we have a candidate who is specifically running on a society-wide critique of that.
Yes, it's very validating in that sense. I think Nomiki has a good handle on this stuff. And I like that, you know, it comes down to a lot of like, you know, when there's a jump ball, the ref is going to always go for one team. And I think that that's totally true. And I think it's a dynamic people should be aware of. On the other hand, I want to say to people, if you get totally in a conspiracy route, and think whatever you want to think about the DNC. I don't have any moral problem with it. But that is exactly what they would want you to think.
That's because why
if
Lindsey
you're,
Graham
if you're
is
in that conspiracy
it.
Mode, you're not hitting the pavement to crush it in New Hampshire and so on. So don't go down that path either. But
here's
what
I would suggest in terms of that jump ball is that the person always throws the ball with their righty hand, and it always has a tendency to move towards. I'm mixing up my metaphors in terms of like a political ideology, but they throw it with their right hand. It always drifts towards the left. And, you know, there are some people who always line up on the right and crossing things over, probably better with the left. But the point is that I don't think that it is, that this is a question of it being, of there being some type of like conspiracy. Again, I think it is just incompetence that is born, that happens to be coincidentally a function of the problem that in many ways animates Sanders' campaign.
The conspiracy of capitalism.
Yeah, to some extent.
Institutional rot.
Yeah. I mean, and to some extent, you know, at different times, Warren has talked about corruption in this way, but she does not see it as endemic as much as, whatever. Your mileage may vary, but.
I'm an endemic guy.
Yeah. I mean, I think like there is a problem with this stuff. And certainly it's even more problematic in the context of institutions that are supposed to be in some way more democratic than a privately owned business. And I understand that technically the Democratic Party is a privately owned business, but they at least,
privatization for you.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's always been that way. And
that's always been a problem. I mean, we can get back into the history of, you know, I mean, yeah, this isn't my hobby horse right now, but one of the reasons the third party thing is so actually hard to do outside of like, you know, Hail Mary presidential runs is that for decades of American history, longer, both parties have actually colluded together to make it. I mean, if you read about European protocols for how you get a third party on the ballot, they're always extremely straightforward and easy to do. The United States, yeah. And so that's the type of thing.
I would also remind people that the Democratic primary up until, you know, now it seems like a long way ago, 50 years ago, there was no primaries.
Yeah.
You'd have one or two tiny like elections and it was just sort of like a data point for the guys in the back room to decide who was going to be the nominee.
Yep.
So we still haven't quite figured
it
out.
I'm also reading, Sagar was pointing out that apparently specifically Iowa wasn't particularly, it existed, but Jimmy Carter made it a thing. Because Jimmy Carter saw that if he could leverage it and turn it into a message, that could propel his insurgency because he was coming out of nowhere. But supposedly before Carter, I mean, it happened, but it wasn't
Carter.
Before Carter is basically, by the time before Carter, we're basically going back to the, 72 is when it
the first
wasn't
time they
in
had
the
primaries
cigar
after
backed,
McGovern,
the cigar-filled
yes,
room.
And that was because McGovern did not want the unions to have such powers.
Right.
To determine who the nominee was going to be. I mean, so there's a lot of like, yeah, there's a lot of cross currents and, someone wants me to grow a spine and call out corruption. It's corrupt. Super chat.
It is corrupt.
Well,
I don't think anybody's ever questioned that they got a contract that they shouldn't have gotten because
it's
of
not,
corruption.
I don't think that there is a plot because I'll be honest with you. I think the only thing that would have been the, if Bernie's not going to win by 8 percentage points, both on the delegate count and the first round voting, and it looks like he's going to win maybe 3 or 4 percentage points on the first round voting, it's conceivable it'll be a little bit higher, and then 3 or 4 percentage points on the delegates, or he loses to Buttigieg. Either way, that's basically the same outcome. You know, give or take a couple of points. Doesn't make it that much of a difference. The big thing is, if they were going to fix it, they would not have Biden come in fifth, and they would not have Klobuchar move up. They would basically decide who they wanted to be.
Yep.
Maybe it would be Bloomberg. Maybe it would, I mean, or maybe they're just wildly incompetent at also their plots.
But, I am going to confess.
The plot could also be you just, like, we're incompetent. We could get these results out this news cycle. Let's give it another news cycle.
Yeah.
So Buttigieg can keep.
I got news for you. It's worse for Biden to clear the impeachment hurdle. Because if you drop this stuff right now, I guarantee you right now we could turn on the TV. The only reason why they're talking about Iowa is because it hasn't been returned yet. If Iowa had been returned, we'd be on to the
State
of the Union.
Well, but they would be interested
tomorrow,
in helping people, you know, Buttigieg too. Not
tomorrow,
just Biden.
We will be talking impeachment. But what's going to happen is they're going to announce these things by Thursday, and then it's going to be Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday.
Did you ever read, this is a much
wide
smaller
open.
Example, did you ever read, I can't believe I read this book, but did you ever read the the traffic jam example from 2000 that and Bob Shrum wrote this in his book. Like, this is not, he literally makes himself look bad. Basically, Al Gore and Bill Bradley are in the New Hampshire primary. Bill Bradley has a shot at winning. They want to put it to bed. And essentially what Michael Wally, who's a very sleazy guy and field organizer guy, is pretty much, they basically, Gore's caravan of cars and buses and Secret Service is like, happens to be at a place where it's clogging traffic from people who commute to Boston and are driving home from work. And these are Bradley heavy areas. And presumably if they get to voting stations, it's not good for Gore. And so they basically intentionally like, let's just sit. Like, let's clog the traffic, right? And sure. That's so, I mean, I think that I also want to put things like that in play too, that aren't like grand baroque conspiracies. No, but like, no, people do shit like that. And it's, you know.
But do you have an example in this?
No. I wanted to just put it in the, no, definitely not in this. Of course. I just wanted to put that in play as like.
I'd be surprised if the Sanders people don't do stuff like that.
I would be livid if the Sanders people didn't do stuff like that.
Right.
And I just think that's the whole other level that people should be aware of that's happening.
Of course.
But I would say that when we know that everybody's doing it, if there is an institutional bias that supports one's, like, even in that example, if Bill Bradley's campaign, and there's no ideological stakes in that, but they didn't have the DNC and the incumbent president supporting them. If this campaign got caught trying to pull something like that, there might be a bigger consequence. So, you know, I think institutional bias
hypothetical.
Matters.
I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah.
It's possible.
Yeah.
I just think in this instance, yeah. We have there, if anything, again, I think like outside of somehow preventing Bernie from having a 9 or 10 point victory, which is the only thing that would have really, I think, sort of had any added value from where he's at now.
Right.
Because I really do think that in terms of, from the Sanders perspective, having Biden be fourth or fifth and having Klobuchar still in the race.
It's not a bad night at all.
Those are the, I mean,
yep.
Like I say, if you give me 9 points win by Sanders, I would take that. But if I'm not getting that, or even if I am getting that, the value of Biden being fifth, I think I would rather Bernie where he is now with Biden being fifth and putting Klobuchar at fourth, because they are not going to be able to decide who's going to be the anti-Bernie.
Right. And
they won't be able to do it until after Super Tuesday.
That's right.
And then I think it could be too late.
Yep.
So who knows?
And maybe real quick, I mean, did you already put this up? But I like that, this Bhaskar point. That's
saying elections are all hacked or completely manipulated is a great way to convince working people not to come out and vote and bother with supporting an insurgent candidate. Yeah, I mean, this is the, you know, the same thing as if Alex Jones didn't exist, the CIA would invent him. It's like you put people down a wormhole with these conspiracy theories. All it does is disempower them. It basically makes them feel that there is nothing that they can do to win. And you know, again, I go back to the Air America days. I would get a lot of emails saying there must be a mole in Air America because there's no way you guys would do these dumb things. And there was no, like, if you were a rival campaign or station, these people were so idiotic who were making these decisions, you would never hire them to be double agents. Like, they're just too dumb.
I do want to say
they can't execute anything. They only just like follow the smell of the food.
And I just want to say real quick, I like Bhaskar saying completely manipulated, because yes, all these elections, especially if you're running a genuine progressive candidate, are going to be manipulated by the bureaucracies, I think.
Of course.
Any chance they have, they're going to.
Right. Of course. Right. I mean, there are structural things that, I mean, are just exist and they're obvious. And we can see them. We can see them. You know, it was like the DNC's decision in 2016 to have all the debates on like Saturday nights at 3 a.m. You can see what they're doing.
Yep.
I don't think it ended up helping them. I think it actually ended up hurting Hillary Clinton. But you could see what their attempt was. It was quite obvious. They were trying to, and it didn't work. It didn't work. And part of that evidence is that, you know, like, part of the evidence that Hillary Clinton was uniquely a bad candidate is that Bernie Sanders did not do the numbers he did in Iowa in 2016. Now, there's a lot of different options and whatnot, but it shows that a significant portion of his vote was an anti-Clinton vote. With that said, he still seems to have the plurality within this electorate as we see it now. He has it at 62% in Iowa. I'm talking just sheer plurality, you know, not like, because the reality is that when push comes to shove, you don't necessarily get your second chance, although I guess theoretically at the convention you will. But that would suggest that, you know, things would have to be static in terms of the way that breaks down, and we don't know. All right, so folks, we will see you tomorrow. We'll probably do some news. And tomorrow night, oddly enough, we will not be doing a show.
There will be TMBS.
But TMBS will be doing one.
Indeed.
So
Emma Vigeland,
good
back
luck
from
with that.
Iowa's hanging out with us, telling us what's going on. And Corey Pine, great writer and writer of AM Quickie, is going to explain to us why technology is bad and we should not be...
It's going to be a tough case to make this week.
To it, or like nuclear first response or a whole host of other things that we've outsourced in a very foolish way.
Is Robbie Mook working on a nuclear response?
That's probably his answer. I'm done with politics.
Let's just make sure that we don't have any more numbers. We do or no?
Numbers on the... Is there anything else from Iowa come out? I haven't seen anything.
Folks, bye-bye.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know. Choice was made for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know.